It's the morning of March 15th. We're chasing a tip about a man who's leaving the country. Our sources tell us he just took a carry-on bag through security that was packed with $1 million cash. You can do that as long as you fill out one of these government forms. The money is usually headed to the Middle East, Dubai, and points beyond. Our sources say last year alone, more than $100 million cash left MSP in carry-on luggage.
How much money do you think has been sent around fraudulently here inside Minnesota?
Over the years, I would say anywhere from $80 to $100 billion.
The Somalian fraud is nationwide.
Columbus, Ohio has the second largest Somali population after Minneapolis. The money is in suitcases in Columbus. It flies to Minnesota. It goes to Minneapolis, then the couriers in Minneapolis pick up that money, combine it with the money in Minnesota, and take it overseas.
What's the name of the child care here?
I don't know.
I ask, has this place ever been a child care? The woman says no. But obviously Washington state records tell a completely different story.
Yeah, this specific address is locked into Washington state records as a daycare.
Yeah.
They have made $210,000. Just this year.
And how many kids again is this place registered for?
Oh, that's the fun part. Three.
Three kids?
So this place are licensed for nine children.
Okay. This place is licensed for nine.
But they have six slots available.
Right.
Which means they only have three kids and they've raked in $210,000 in tax money.
The Somali Education Resource Center. Suite 301 here at 299 East Granville Road in Dublin, Ohio. Now, the deal is that $14 million into this center here. This is a single office. And by the way, there's nothing inside it. We've already looked. It is very, very, very much dark, and it looks like there's maybe a couch inside.
The Democrats continue to play the race card, of course.
Whether you're Somalian, Italian, Indian, Irish, Jewish, I don't care. If you're stealing billions of dollars from American taxpayers, funneling it to terror networks, you do not belong here. That's not called immigration in America. That is called criminality.
What do you make of this argument of failure to assimilate and sort of ruining America? How do you understand this?
I mean, when I think about Stephen Miller and his white supremacist rhetoric, it reminds me of the way the Nazis described Jewish people.
These people are just idiots. I'm at the point where it's become really hard to have an intellectual debate with any of these people, because the level of stupidity that they are displaying every single day is frankly embarrassing.
The idea that this is a white nation that needs to be preserved is a fascinatingly disgusting view.
He's always been a racist, a bigot, a xenophobic.
The one place where we thought we would never experience this is the U.S. goddamn states.
How is one race being targeted when that supposedly victimized race is robbing Americans from every walk of life?
I'm a licensed private investigator in California. I started looking into state records and I found ghost daycares. These are places where the state inspectors showed up. There would be 28 kids enrolled and there were no kids there in the middle of the day and in the middle of the week.
The Attorney General of Washington State has called the journalists that are investigating the fraud that's going on. Yeah, that's apparently harassment.
At Halali Safia Child Care Center in Kent, Washington, they have received $863,000 since 2023.
I don't see any signs right off the bat that it's a child care.
Washington Attorney General Nick Brown has labeled it potential harassment that could lead to hate crime reports, emphasizing that unsubstantiated accusations and door knocking disrupts providers and families.
A lot of this is generated by the president and Elon Musk tweeting out unverified reports in Minnesota, and that quickly, grew a storm across the nation. What I'm concerned about is YouTubers showing up at your porch and filming children.
This coming from an attorney general that is aggressively targeting Christians. But if you have...
If you ask Grok, or if you ask a sports nutritionist, or if you ask the nutritionists on the Olympic teams, they will tell you that creatine is absolutely a must. TheAlexShowStore.com already has the very best creatine you can get on the market. But now we're introducing this, and I am extremely excited. Let me introduce you to this bad boy that comes in two delicious flavors. That is the recommended daily allowance of the highest quality type of creatine. Right there, concentrated, the very best. We get it from the top lab in the country, the highest rated. 5 milligrams of this a day. Bottom line, this is tasty, it's delicious, it's good for you, it helps children, it helps middle-aged people, and it really helps old people. If you're not taking creatine, you're crazy, and we've got the best.
Tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome to the American Journal. We're excited you're all jumping on board with us today. A lot going on over here. Happy Thursday, everyone. Big day ahead of us. Big, big day. We're going to take you live to Davos later in the show. We've got some incredible people that want to share what's going on the ground there. I'm talking about Data Republican. As many of you know, on X, she has done some incredible work digging into all of the corruption, where your money's going, and also exposing George Soros and how he's trying to destroy this country. So we look forward to having Jenica, a.k.a. Data Republican, on the program as well. She's a member of the deaf community, so she'll be joined with her interpreter as well. And then she'll also be joined by Larry Taunton, who's also is in the area. They're all hanging out. Larry Taunton, Data Republican, and her interpreter. And the videos that they're posting are actually quite funny. Apparently when in Davos, you drink a lot, and they've been doing that, and they've been living up to the party in Switzerland. And so that is what they've been up to, but they've also been digging and asking questions and making a lot of people feel very uncomfortable. So we look forward to having Data Republican on, as well as Larry Taunton as well, and their interpreter, which we're very excited about. We're also excited to have Sally Pipes on the program later today, because over on the Hill, there is going to be hearings, and it's going to be some of the top healthcare CEOs, plus CVS is going to be present, and we could just predict how that's going to go. It's probably going to result in a lot of Congress members yelling at these CEOs. But President Trump is really trying to take this fight on to make healthcare affordable in this country, and that's the big one for him. So we are going to talk with Sally, who's been an expert. She's been fighting against Obamacare for a while now, when the Clintons were looking to cause we'll say chaos on our healthcare system, even worse than what it is. She was pushing back on that as well. So Sally will break it all down for us, because it's a very complex issue that's worth your attention, of course. We'll also be diving into Jack Smith, because Jack Smith is testifying today in front of Congress, obviously. And it's going to get quite interesting. As many of you guys know, House Republicans had him testify behind closed doors prior to it was a deposition. And unfortunately, it shouldn't have happened behind closed doors. Even Jack Smith saying that I was looking to have a public hearing. So now we finally have that public hearing. It's coming your way. It will start in less than an hour. We'll bring you straight there when Jack Smith begins to speak. Because you and I, well, we want to hear what he's got to say, because he's got a lot to answer for. So a lot happening on that front that we look forward to talking about with you today. But let's kick things off with what's happening today in Davos, Switzerland. As many of you guys have probably seen, you know, President Trump keeps touting this Board of Peace. And we're going to play clip one for you, because this is what just happened moments ago. They started signing to bring this officially together. Take a listen to clip one.
If President Trump and all of the Board of Peace members could please join the president around the table. The president is now going to sign the inaugural resolution that will resolve the Board of Peace's Gaza mandate per the United Nations Security Council Resolution 2803.
Thank you.
All right, obviously a big day for President Trump getting that officially signed with a couple of world leaders there. Not everyone's on board with this. In fact, they've gotten massive pushback because folks are worried this is going to replace the U.N. And, I mean, it wouldn't be too bad if we replaced the U.N. But President Trump saying, no, the U.N. and his Board of Peace are going to work side by side, and that's how this is going to go about. But Norway and Switzerland both saying, we don't want any part in this. France has also declined, it looks like. And the U.K. says, we're not going to yet join. So that's interesting in itself. And Canada and China aren't going to jump on board either. That all makes sense, right? Because those are all the globalists who have captured those countries. So this all makes sense. I want to remind you guys, we're keeping our eye right now on the WEF because Zelensky just jumped up to the podium and he's now speaking, probably begging for more money that he shouldn't be given. But we'll bring it to you when something does occur that's worth your time. As of right now, though, Zelensky, who is making his way to the podium, is probably going to be asking for more money. But we're not going to bring you there just because we don't want it to waste your time. But luckily, we have some great production teams here in the building, some great producers who are going to be listening in and let us know if there's anything important that happens. All right, folks. We're also paying attention to what President Trump is saying. President Trump said yesterday that he actually did, in fact, invite Putin, that's obviously the Russian leader, to join the Board of Peace. Now, Putin has not yet announced whether he's going to be joining, but he did say that he is going to be looking at this. Putin told Russian Security Council that the foreign minister will study the proposal and will respond whenever they're prepared to respond. So at least Putin has received an invite. President Trump trying to extend the arm of peace to Vladimir Putin as well. President Trump was also moments ago talking about his Board of Peace. Now, again, this happened in the wee hours in the morning. Most of you probably weren't even awake. I was, though, so I was watching live. But President Trump gave us a little bit of description of what he sees when he thinks about the Board of Peace, what his vision is for this Board of Peace in clip two. Take a listen.
As part of this historic record of major peace initiatives, today we're announcing more details regarding the Board of Peace, so important. This board has the chance to be one of the most consequential bodies ever created, and it's my enormous honor to serve as its chairman. I was very honored when they asked me to do it. We had an idea to do it, and then they came, they said, you be the chairman. And But I take it very seriously. We have a great group of people. And incredible young people that are leading it from within. It's running beautifully, started already. And every country, just about every country, wants to be a part of it. And we just sent out the letters a couple of days ago, and these are just the countries that are here. They happen to be in Davos. So we said, we'd be honored if you wanted to join us up on the stage. And it's really great. They're friends of mine. I think, let me see. Yeah, every one of them is a friend of mine. A couple I like, a couple I don't like. No, I like, actually, this group, I like every single one of them. Can you believe it? Usually I have about two or three that I can't stand. Usually I have two or three that I don't like. I don't find them up here. I like every one of these people.
Thank you.
No, they're great people. They're great leaders. And the Board of Peace is composed of leaders, the top leaders in the world, actually.
All right. So a little over exaggeration, but he does have some incredible people there front and center. Now, I not a big Jared Kushner fan, but Jared Kushner was also speaking at this announcement of the Board of Peace. And it's interesting because I think a lot of the conspiracy theorists got it right. This war between Israel and Gaza, well, it was just a way for profit at this point. That's kind of what it looks like right now. I mean, you have Jared Kushner who's on the ground talking about remodeling Gaza. And, of course, there's a bunch of really wealthy real estate developers jumping all over the plan. But he outlined what his vision is for what it would look like to go about and to rebuild Gaza into a massive big city. I mean, take a listen to clip 31st.
Going forward, number one thing is going to be security. Obviously, we've been working very closely with the Israelis to figure out a way through de-escalation. And the next phase is working with Hamas on demilitarization, which I'll talk about in a second. But without security, nobody's going to make investments. Nobody's going to come, you know, build there. We need investments in order to start giving jobs. We want to take these people. 85% of the aid of Gaza, 85% of the GDP of Gaza has been aid for a long time. That's not sustainable. It doesn't give these people dignity. It doesn't give them hope. And so we want to use free market economy principles. A lot of what President Trump spoke about that he's doing in America, we want to bring the same mindset, the same approach to a place like Gaza to give these people the ability to thrive and have a good life. Let's see. So on the aid, I mentioned the UN. So now people are talking about famine. 100% of the food needs are met, and that's been overabundance. The cost of goods have gone down tremendously. Over 55,000 trucks have gone in, and over 1.4 million pallets. So it's been the largest humanitarian effort done into a war zone that anyone's been able to tell us about. This really has been a great joint effort that everyone's been able to do. So we did a master plan. We brought in, I think, Yakir Gabay, who's one of the most successful real estate developers and brilliant people I know. He's volunteered to do this not for profit, really because of his heart. He wants to do this. And we've developed ways to redevelop Gaza. Gaza, as President Trump's been saying, has amazing potential. And this is for the people of Gaza. And we've developed it into zones. In the beginning, we were toying with the idea of saying, let's build a free zone, and then we have a Hamas zone. And then we said, you know what, let's just plan for catastrophic success. Hamas signed a deal to demilitarize. That is what we are going to enforce. People ask us what our plan B is. We do not have a plan B. We have a plan. We signed an agreement. We are all committed to making that agreement work. There's a master plan. We'll be doing it in phasing. In the Middle East, they build cities like this in, 2-3 million people. They build this in 3 years. And so stuff like this is very doable if we make it happen. Rafah will start with. This will show a lot of workforce housing. We think this could be done in 2-3 years. We've already started removing the rubble and doing some of the demolition. And then New Gaza. It could be a hope. It could be a destination, have a lot of industry, and really be a place that the people there can thrive, have great employment. Once this starts going, we think there should be 100% full employment and opportunity for everybody there. And we have a lot of data on what can be, but we think that this really gives the Gazan people an opportunity to live their aspirations. But it all starts with security, and it all starts with governance.
Now, as you heard there, he's got big plans that might not be actually realistic, considering the fact that Hamas is still running the show. And I know the president's very persistent on making sure that he disarms them. Talking about Hamas, but the reality of it is, of course, they're not going to do just that. And you're also talking about people who have been taught since very early ages to hate and to kill off non-believers. So I don't see this going well. I don't see Gaza becoming a place where you and I both want to go on vacation, regardless of how you feel about Israel. It's just not a realistic plan, but Jared Kushner is still pushing it. And by the way, wasn't Jared Kushner the one that didn't want to join in on President Trump's campaign at all for the 2024 race? So he kind of just makes his way back in, although he said he was going to keep himself out when President Trump was running for office. Now he finds a way to slither on in there. It's not very exciting for me. Not very exciting for me at all. But we're keeping our eye on Davos. Many of you guys know, like I mentioned in the open of the show, we're going to go take you live to Davos with Larry Taunton, Jenica Pounds, who is AKA Data Republican, as well as her interpreter, who will be joining us in the third hour of the program live from Davos to break down the very latest that's happening there. But I want to switch gears a little bit because President Trump yesterday gave us an update in regards to replacing Jerome Powell as Fed chair. As many of you guys know, his term is about to be up and President Trump is going to be able to fill that seat very, very soon. So he provided the media with an update yesterday. Take a listen to clip four.
I'd say we're down to three, but we're down to two, and I probably can tell you we're down to maybe one in my mind. But
did Rick Reeder impress you in recent?
Very impressive. Yeah, he's been there for...
Because for a while, the betting markets had borscht in the
league.
Well,
Rick is very good. They're all good. You know, all three are good. All three would be, I think, good. We have a problem with the man that's there now. He's too late. He's always too late, except when it comes to politics for the other side, where he was actually too early.
So good news for the rest of us. Jerome Powell's almost on his way out. And yesterday, by the way, folks, over in the Supreme Court, it's worth noting that the opening arguments regarding Lisa Cook, who is one of the higher ups over at the Fed, she had her and her attorneys had their opening arguments over at the Supreme Court yesterday. Jerome Powell was present, as well as the former chair of the Fed. And it didn't go so bad, but it wasn't amazing. It wasn't amazing. It sounded like both sides are kind of in the middle in all of this, whether or not President Trump has the authority to can Lisa Cook. Again, we'll see how that all plays out. But yesterday was the big opening moment for them. Interesting, you guys, because I want to bring this point to your, I want to put it on your radar. As many of you guys know, just a couple of weeks ago, we had Mark Mitchell on the program, and he's the head pollster for Rasmussen. And Mark Mitchell is a pretty unique individual. He's got a lot of say in a lot of things, and it's mainly because he's got his finger on the pulse constantly. That's the reason why the White House took a meeting with him and wanted to hear where the voters were at on a lot of things. Mark Mitchell made it very clear to President Trump and his team that the housing crisis is a major crisis for Americans because Americans can't afford to buy homes in the United States. Now, at the time, the Trump administration wasn't even really addressing the issue of affordability in this country, but they've taken this issue on now, and they're not just stopping at the housing issues. We'll get to that in a minute about the credit card issue, but right now, President Trump is calling out the big companies like BlackRock, like we saw yesterday on stage. By the way, BlackRock is also running the WEF these days. Surprise, surprise. But he's calling out these massive corporations that are buying single-family homes throughout the country, and he's saying he's going to put an end to all of this in clip 23. Take a listen.
They were buying up all the homes. People couldn't buy homes. You know, you have these big companies, these big corporations buying up thousands of homes and renting them or doing whatever they do with them. Some of them are flipping them for a big profit. But it got to be too much, too many. It became, you know, it's good investment. And we're not saying take them away, but we're saying that we don't want that. We want people to be able to buy a home.
Not saying take it away. We're saying that these people should not be able to, these companies should not be able to purchase homes and just force Americans to just be forever renters. The reality of it is rent is through the roof. Most Americans can't even afford to buy anymore because it's gotten so expensive to keep a roof over their head through rent. So saving is just unrealistic, and that's a combination between that and also inflation, which again, the White House continues to tell us is going down. But if you shop at a supermarket, you probably haven't seen any of the benefits of prices coming down. You know, slowly we're starting to see it, as I posted on X. Gas prices here in Texas are pretty damn good, I gotta say. But the reality of it is for so many Americans, they are barely getting by. And yes, a lot of it is going to be corporate greed, right? Because you've gotten used to paying those higher prices at the grocery store and other stores. So they just say, they're going to keep buying it. They've been able to manage it so far. But most Americans can't manage it. In fact, most Americans are putting this all into their credit cards. And the amount of Americans who have gone into credit card debt is absolutely devastating for this country because most people are living off of those cards. And those companies have gotten extremely greedy. Not only are they charging the actual card holders interest on those purchases that they've made, but then they also charge the retailers. And it's anywhere from 3% to 5% for processing fees. So they're double dipping on your issues, on your usage of their cards. And quite frankly, it is frustrating because these companies are greedy. I mean, there's no other way to put it. I believe in capitalism, but folks, these companies have taken things too far. When, you know, families are barely getting by and they're just looking to slap some groceries on a credit card so they don't have to worry about it this month, you shouldn't be charged anywhere from 23 to 30% interest. So President Trump is calling it out, and he's got plans for these credit card companies in clip 5. Take a listen.
The credit card companies are getting 28%, 30%. These people don't know they're paying that.
Right. Is it a one-year?
1 year cap of 10%, and I love it. I know it's sort of like, it sounds like the mayor of New York maybe came up with that, but the people are paying, they can't make it. They can't pay 28. You know, whatever happened to usury, they can't pay 28%. And so I said, 1 year, I'd like to see a 1 year cap of 10% with the credit card companies. And they'd understand that. I've had calls from credit card companies, people that are friends of mine, actually. And I treat them good. I respect them greatly, but they make a lot of money. They got to give the people a break. 28% interest. You know, people go out and they buy something, and if they're a little bit late, they're paying 28%. They end up filing for bankruptcy. So I would like to see that happen. Yeah.
I would love to see that happening, and we're hopeful that President Trump will do just that. He's looking to cap those cards off at 10%, and that would be much needed. I feel so bad for people just trying to raise a family. It's nearly impossible these days, and that's one of the biggest issues. You know, I know we constantly talk about how we aren't having kids anymore. I mean, the reality of it is folks are waiting until their mid-30s to start having families. I know that's not for everyone in this country, But a lot of people are, and the numbers are extremely, extremely concerning and something that's worth the attention of the federal government. And we've got to crunch down on all of this. We've got to figure out a solution that doesn't put Americans into debt. And that's the big one. President Trump obviously working on a lot of very important things, and it's important to highlight that. But if you're Democrats right now, you're not liking all these wins. Obviously, there's stuff that you could be critical about with the president, but there's a lot of wins on the board. And in clip 9, one Democrat, he's a congressman, Congressman Jason Crow, is going out there and he's saying, listen, if we win, we're going to be focused on just getting rid of President Trump. Take a listen to clip 9.
This president is a danger to this country and this democracy. So what I'm doing is I'm looking at all options. All of our options must be on the table, from impeachment, the 25th Amendment, to winning elections, which is actually my primary goal right now as the recruitment chair for House Democrats, is to win elections and to take power away from Donald Trump.
To take power away from Donald Trump. You know what that is? That's an insurrectionist, folks. President Trump was rightfully elected by the American people. Then you have this Democrat, Jason Crow, going out there and saying, I'm going to just toss him out. He shouldn't be president. I get to decide. Democrats get to decide who's the president of the United States, not the American people. You see, that's the problem with these people. They're so emboldened to boldly come out there and just say, hey, your vote didn't matter. Your vote didn't matter. We are going to have the say on whether or not he stays in power. Again, midterms are not looking good for Republicans, but the reality of it is they've done this themselves. And they're letting you know, Democrats are letting you know, if they do gain the majority in the House, that they're going to be specifically focused on getting rid of President Trump. And who are they going to blame? They're going to blame us? Oh, maybe the black pillars they'll blame. No, it's not our fault. It's not our fault. Give us something that we could brag about. Give us something that will motivate the American people to go out there and vote. You know, we have the president right now, and it's great that he wants to focus on this, but he's working on the Board of Peace and working on rebuilding Gaza. How about we rebuild American cities in this country? The infrastructure is crumbling. We know this. We know this. How about we stop asking for investors to go invest in other countries when we have a country that they can invest in here on American soil? Now, I get it. He's trying to split his time, but there's no reason to do that. You weren't elected by the Palestinians. You were elected by Americans. And it's really frustrating to sit back and watch this all unravel because, folks, when midterms come, it's not looking good for Republicans. Because when we take a glimpse over what's happening overseas, we're watching as our president is out here battling it out. He's battling it out for the Iranians. Great. He's battling it out now for the Palestinians to make sure that they have homes, to make sure they have beautiful cities. Our cities are turning to crap. Bridges are literally collapsing. Roadways are collapsing. Ask investors to invest in America, not in Gaza. It's so frustrating to hear because yet again, we're having Democrats so boldly coming out and telling you what they're going to be doing. When they get the majority, they're going to get rid of President Trump. Why is that? Why don't they fear J.D. Vance? Well, those are many questions that are worth answering, and we look forward to doing just that. But in the meantime, though, this is a real, real issue here. If Republicans lose for the midterms, guess what? That's not our fault. It's not my job to motivate voters to go out there and vote. It's the job of the White House. It's the job of Republicans in both the Congress and obviously the Senate as well. So don't blame us when you lose. Blame yourselves for spending more time overseas worried about foreign countries. All right, folks, we got more to discuss in just a bit, like how Pam Bondi is trying to tell you that people will be arrested very, very soon. Don't hold your breath, though. In the meantime, though, head on over to thealexjonesstore.com because right now we have incredible discounts going on over at the shop. And, of course, these discounts vary, and you also get a free T-shirt with no minimum required over at thealexjonesstore.com right now.
Every guest I have had in studio in the last 6 months, I've given our medical grade USP methylene Bluetooth. I don't even tell them what it's going to do. I just say, here, take this, see what happens. Within 15 to 30 minutes, every guest says they've gotten energy like they've never experienced. Clarity, focus. It's like a fog has lifted. Their critical thinking goes to the next level. And that's what the science shows it does in our cells. It's not a stimulant, but it has that effect because it electrochemically turns up the literal electrochemical electricity in the body. And so he was here a few months ago, didn't know what it was, known me for a long time, said sure he'll take it. He heard Kennedy talk about it, RFK Jr. He took it, and it was so game-changing. In the last few months, he ran out of the bottle I gave him, so he wanted more. The first thing he wanted was to take some more before we even went live on air. That's how amazing this is. You want to do the plug, and I appreciate this.
I do. I came in
because you came in saying, I want more Methylene Blue, and then I looked over when you went on the air. You'd already slurped some down. Your mouth was blue. I said, you're Papa Smurf. So, Pettenburn.
How much is the correct amount to put in? About that much?
Yeah. I mean, Kennedy does three droppers. This is really strong.
You gave me some last time. I think you gave it on air. You totally feel the difference. I used the bottle. You gave me, it's great. It totally makes it, you can feel it. It just keeps your energy level up and plateaued without bonks. So I love it. I used the bottle you gave me, and I came back to Austin just to pick up a pump.
Well, you can always get it at thealexjonesshore.com. It will certainly give you all you want. We also have the capsules, but we have the strongest medical grade. It's super good for you. It cleans out your mitochondria. Most people get instant energy, like 99% of people, but it's the workout. It's what it does for your skin, your libido. So you've been on it a few months.
I just had that one bottle, but
and you're saying no letdown. That's the best part. It's not an amphetamine. It's not a speed, but it feels like that.
It's throughout. I see RFKs on it. Yeah, I just used up that bottle, and so for a couple weeks, I had this great energy. But it's not speed. It's not caffeine. It's nothing like that. It's doing something else for you. So I really
It skips three levels of the oxygenation process in the cells. It's just next level. It's incredible, and they've suppressed it. And my medical doctor 6 years ago said, get on it. And I got to get USP grade. It didn't do anything. And then our sponsor got this super strong one. I'm like, oh, let me try it. Whoa. I mean, it funds the operation, folks. But I'm telling you, if you haven't gotten our USP grade, real USP grade, Ultimethylene Blue, thealexjonesshore.com, you are missing out. It is so good for you. 99% of people, it's more than that. Like, I've given it to like 400 people, maybe two or three didn't feel it. Some get totally freaked out that they're going crazy. So talk to a physician first. Take a very low dose the first time. You can't take it if you're on SSRIs and other things. It is amazing. TheAlexJonesShore.com. So,
yeah, it's not psychosomatic. It's not psychotic. You feel it. You feel it.
Well, I didn't tell you what you were going to feel. How fast did it kick in and what did you feel?
I felt it by the time, the end of the show. By the time I got, the last time I was here, I felt it probably by the end of the show or by the time I got my car. You feel instant energy, but without the jitteriness of caffeine and focus. What I felt was focus, mental focus. It's probably like why you are as intense as you are, Alex.
It's made me more intense. Well, I was taking full doses at first and then working out so hard that, you know, I had to go.
You look jacked.
Well, I've cut back. The point is, I only take it every 3 days now because it's crazy. Everything we sell, I want is working and is good. That's what I want. I mean, I'll be like a restaurant. I ain't going to serve dog to people. They're not going to come back. But I mean, this thing is the most dramatic, quick acting, and it's good for you. It's just insane. And if I could just get a few more percentage of the audience to buy it, all our problems would be solved. Patrick Byrne was totally blown away by it, as every other guest we've given it to has been blown away.
Tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back to the American Journal. We're excited you're all jumping on board with us today. We've got more exciting news coming your way today. In case you didn't know, today's a very big, big day. The United States is officially exiting the World Health Organization today. 1 year after President Trump signed that executive order directing us to withdrawal. Now, as many of you guys know, this is big news, obviously something that RFK Jr. wanted from day one, and also the American people as well. So there's a lot to celebrate here. Unless, of course, you're a part of the World Health Organization, they're not very happy. According to Reuters, the WHO said that the United States still has not paid their fees it was owed for 2024 and 2025. And they're claiming we owe them roughly, you know, $260 million. Something tells me you're not going to get that money anytime soon. Good luck enforcing it. Maybe under another administration, if a Democrat ever makes their way into the office, they might get that back. But obviously, as many of you guys know, the World Health Organization says this is going to be a massive loss for them. probably because we were pretty much keeping it alive and keeping it afloat. Also trying to tell the United States that you should probably reconsider that coming from the WHO director general himself. And again, Bill Gates always finds his way into these stories. But Bill Gates even coming out there and saying, even all those convincing dinners where he met with President Trump, it still doesn't look like the U.S. is going to get back over into WHO, saying, I don't think the U.S. will be coming back to WHO in the near future. Yeah, I mean, it's probably the most honest thing Bill has ever said. So good news here, the United States officially making their exit from the World Health Organization today. Today's a great day. Today's a great day, right? We got our exit from the World Health Organization. We've also got Jack Smith, who is going to be testifying today publicly in just a few moments. And we've also got a healthcare CEO is going to make their way in front of the Ways and Means Committee today to testify. And I'm sure it's going to have a lot of politicians being very, very aggressive, of course, trying their best to get their soundbite in, but most importantly, actually asking the tough questions, because so many Americans in this country do not like these health insurance companies. Also going to be there, not just the insurance companies itself, but CVS will also be present as well. And they have obviously the massive pharmacies all across the country, even now taking over Target as well. So this will be interesting and something I'll keep my eye on as well. And we'll have Sally Pipes on in the third hour of the show. She's someone who's been following this, studying this. And so she's going to help us all understand what's going on here in President Trump's push to not directly make the payments to the healthcare companies directly. He actually wants to give it to the American people. And so I just want her to map out what all of that's going to look like for both you and I. And she will do just that in the third hour of the program as well. But let's talk a little bit about justice, because we keep hearing that arrests are coming and we haven't seen anything. In clip six, Kristi Noem, who obviously isn't in charge of prosecuting, so this wouldn't be up her alley, but she's speaking out about what we can expect over the next few hours. And not just her, but Pam Bondi also making her appearance yesterday on Fox News as well. Take a listen to clip six.
And that pastor really did a remarkable thing there, trying to protect his parishioners.
And even the parishioners, I imagine, have felt and feel intimidated. And
they did. And there's going to be arrests in the next several hours, Greta. There will be arrests tied to that.
There's a database that's out right now involving people putting ICE agents' license plates and other information out there in the public. It's here in Minnesota. It's in other cities. Can those people expect to face federal charges?
They better look out, because you cannot dox, you cannot, law enforcement's information is private. And you wonder, why are our ICE officers wearing masks? To protect themselves from these people. We are going to do everything legally we can do to keep our men and women in law enforcement safe and the citizens of this state safe, so they can go to church, they can go to school, they can go to work, and they can feel safe. Minnesota has been a war zone with criminals, no longer under the Donald Trump administration.
You guys better look out. You better look out. Pam Bondi's coming for you. Don't you dare dox federal agents. I don't know, folks. I'm so tired of the sound bites. And it's like they crank her up and they turn her on, and then she just gives you the same couple of sentences to fire up the boomer base, I guess. The reality of it is we haven't seen anything. And although she's claiming that these are going to come, these arrests are way over the time limit for any type of serious arrest taking place. I mean, we haven't seen anything. We haven't seen anything. So it makes for a great Fox News soundbite, but we haven't seen any action yet. We haven't. And that's the reason why so many Americans are frustrated. We've been sitting here and waiting. And waiting and waiting. We keep hearing grand juries. We keep hearing about all these things popping up all over the place. But we haven't seen anything. We haven't seen anything. I hope that in the next few days that those who did walk into that church and try to intimidate those who were trying to worship, I do hope that they are arrested. Because the Biden regime set those standards. They went after the pro-lifers. They wrapped them up, threw them in prison for several years. All because they were peacefully protesting outside of abortion clinics. So if we apply that same piece of legislation to all equally, which again, the Biden regime set those rules, they should have been rounded up and arrested by now. But again, Kristi Noem telling us, the DHS secretary, that that's going to happen soon, at the next couple of hours. Well, I've got my clock going, and we really hope that does happen because I'm so tired of these little sound bites. But again, even if they are arrested, this doesn't call it even because these are the arrests we want to see. Again, no major arrests when it comes to the core issues. Even President Trump is getting annoyed. The Biden auto pen scandal is the simplest win you could ever have. And yet they haven't taken this victory lap yet. Why? Because they won't do anything about it. James Comer getting angry over as the chairman. He's not happy. Why is he not happy? Because he keeps saying, I've given them everything we got, still no arrests. And they want them to head into midterms with zero major arrests. So no surprise there. This is what they keep doing. They keep going out there and telling you and I that things are going to happen, but we haven't seen anything. As many of you guys know, the Minneapolis mayor Jacob Frey, is someone who is very open about his disliking for the federal government. In fact, he wanted Minneapolis PD to go to war with federal agents. We played that clip for you last week where he literally told Minneapolis PD, you know, the same group of law enforcement officers that they wanted to defund just a few years ago, that they better get ready. Our residents want them to be stopped, these federal agents, and that's the job of Minneapolis PD. That's what he said. That was his words. He wants war. He wants war in Minneapolis. And he's also admitting to a couple of crimes. In clip 7, he actually does just that last night. Take a listen.
In Minneapolis, we will not cooperate with ICE or any federal agency around immigration enforcement work. We will not. And there's a good reason, by the way, that we won't. And it's not just the moral imperative here.
Not the moral imperative here. Yeah, folks, that's the mayor. That's the mayor. Again, we did hear subpoenas went out, so we'll have to hear from him soon. But again, he is openly telling the American people he's not going to cooperate with ICE. He's not going to cooperate with any of them. He will protect his rapists, his murderers, his child predators. And there's nothing the federal government can do to stop him. That's what he's telling you. That's what he's telling you. And President Trump, he was very vocal a couple of days ago on Truth Social saying that DHS needs to focus on the crooks that they're getting in Minneapolis. They're trying. The media's not covering it, though. How do I know? Okay, I'm a part of the email list. I see it go out daily, two times, three times a day. They're keeping you updated on the guys that they get off the streets, the predators they're getting off the streets. Everything going on in Minneapolis is a fraud. Everything going on right now in Minneapolis is a fraud. There was a story that came out, too. This one will give you a good chuckle. Ah, we've got an update for you. Breaking news just coming in now. As I'm sitting here talking junk about Pam Bondi, well, guess what? Federal authorities have arrested an anti-ICE agitator after a mob stormed a church service in St. Paul. That's according to the AG herself. This coming from Fox News. It looks like this was just posted on Twitter, guys. Minutes ago, at my direction, HSI and the FBI agents executed an arrest in Minnesota. Nakima Armstrong, who allegedly played a key role in organizing the coordinated attack at City's church, apparently has been arrested. Well, that's news. Good news. But it's just one person. She wasn't there alone. Are you going to lock up Don Lemon? Don't be a coward, Pam Bondi. He described it as an operation several times. He didn't say it was a protest. He said operation. He put himself in that situation. Arrest Don Lemon. Don't be a coward. Don't be a coward. He's even referring to those who were just there to worship as white supremacists. Lock that troll up. Don't go with the easiest one, which is just a regular civilian. You're going to go after one. One, what's going to happen? They're going to start a Give, Send, Go page. All these NGO groups are going to pour into her legal fees so she can fight the case. How about you bankrupt them by arresting every single person that was there that day? Round them up. Round them up. Minneapolis is filled with fraud stories, and it's just overwhelming at some point. This one's quite interesting. Again, these are allegations. This has not been proven factually true yet, but neither has their story. There was a family of eight traveling in their car who apparently got caught in the crossfire, according to this outlet, of protests that were taking place in Minneapolis. Now, they claimed that three of their six children, including a six-month-old baby, were hospitalized because they were tear gassed. They said they were just caught in the crossfire. is what they told them. Now, they also said that they weren't a part of the protest. Now, interesting enough, there's an outlet that did some digging into all of this, not the Bee. Now, obviously, that's, you know, trying to say that we're not fake news. It's so insane, these stories, that it's not fake. But they've done some digging into all of this. And we can slowly scroll down on this because these parents raised $170,000 claiming that ICE gassed their kids on the way home of a basketball game. But apparently they're accusing them, and again, these are just allegations, of lying, saying that the father and the mother actually left the kids in the car and then ran off to the protest to join the protesters. Now, how do they know this? Well, apparently there's videos and they've circled the images, which they say are the parents participating in the protest. Now, again, CBS News, ABC News, and other outlets reported that the family apparently was not a part of the protest, but they're the parents, allegedly. Now, they have raised, which is so insane, in GoFundMe fees. They've raised a ton of cash. A ton of cash. Probably worth flagging so they don't get paid. Probably worth flagging so they don't get paid until this is proven to be factually true. But, you know, it doesn't really scream responsible parents when you stop at a violent protest and include your kids in that. Hey, but they got a $170,000 payout. Not too shabby. And it's not just happening. It's not just happening in Minneapolis. This is an interesting story that I found earlier today in Clip 8. I want to play this for you because News Nation actually is doing some great work in regards to investigating the fraud. And they have found something that's absolutely alarming. As many of you guys know, there was a massive shooting in Maryland a couple of years back, and over $6.6 billion was actually raised for the victims' families and survivors. Now, interesting enough, when you assume that $6.6 million is being raised, you assume that those funds are being dished out towards the victims' families. You assume it's going to go to a greater purpose. Well, unfortunately, that's not the case. It looks like nearly $2 million actually went to 29 nonprofits, including nine of them being Somalian Link. Well, what does that mean? Take a listen to the report that was on News Nation earlier yesterday in Clip 9.
Well, our story clearly struck a nerve. You know, there's a lot of people here that are angry in Lewiston. There are calls for the DOJ to investigate. We're hearing from more victims and more survivors from this shooting. We're also hearing from survivors from other shootings across the country who are coming forward to say, we stand with Lewiston, and they're demanding that these monies be given to the victims.
It didn't really hit me and really upset me until I was in a position with a $93,000 hospital bill that I couldn't cover.
In Maine's worst shooting, Jennifer Zenka was shot twice. She endured multiple surgeries and then struggled to pay for them. Cases like Jennifer's are precisely why a local nonprofit, the Maine Community Foundation, established the Lewiston-Auburn Area Response Fund.
And they told us that night that 100% of the funds would go to the victims.
But things didn't work out as donors and victims' families thought they would. A year later, Amy Sussman, who lost her nephew Max in the shooting, uncovered that a big chunk of the money raised, $1.9 million, went not to the victims but to 29 different nonprofits.
And I didn't understand that nine of the 29 are for immigrants only, nonprofits that serve the immigrant community in Lewiston. Auburn-Lewiston area, I guess.
Groups like Empowered Immigrant Women Unite, Generation NOR, New Mainers Public Health Initiative, the Somali Bantu Community Association, and Gateway Community Services, which has been accused of misusing taxpayer funds.
They raised money for nonprofits on the backs of 18 people who were murdered, 13 people who were shot, and 136 people who escaped their attempted murder. They used that to raise money for nonprofits.
Destiny Johnson also survived the shooting that night and is demanding answers.
You know, why would you give money to nonprofits that aren't even helping any of the survivors? It just doesn't make sense.
I guarantee you that these 29 nonprofits, the majority of them, did not help anyone from the mass shooting.
And that's what's going on right now. All across the country, people are starting to expose what's been going on with these immigration nonprofits, these Somalian groups. Folks, they've been stealing our money for years now, and people need to go to prison for the rest of their lives for this. But that's sadly not going to be the case. Why do we keep importing people from countries like this? Why? Why? A country that loves itself would never allow this to happen. That's just the reality of it. That's just the reality of it. All right, as many of you guys know, the Trump administration has been going to war with those who have been protesting outside of or inside of college campuses, specifically Columbia. This was a bigger issue back in 2025. As many of you guys know, a lot of people were fired up and heated on the subject matter and the White House stepping in and making some arrests, obviously. And those for were non-citizens at the time were getting their visas revoked. Well, there was one individual, I believe I'm saying it, Muhammad Khalil. He's an individual who has been very well known on the front of all of this. He's 30-year-old, and he was a pro-Palestinian activist over in Columbia University, where he formerly went to school, but he wasn't going to school allegedly at the time, according to multiple reports. But interesting enough, it's been a back and forth between the immigration judges who have been stepping in, and, you know, he was arrested by ICE and he was released. Well, there was a ruling that came down yesterday that he actually is not even, the judge who issued his release isn't even, she didn't even allow to do that, was pretty much what happened. And so, now DHS is reacting to that news in clip 10 and detailing where he's going next. Take a listen.
Mahmoud Khalil, who is the Syrian national who was detained and was scheduled for deportation after organizing and allegedly being part of a Columbia University apartheid divest group that is overtly pro-terrorism, praises terrorists like Yahya Sinwar, who killed dozens of Americans on October 7th. He was then released by a judge. Yeah. You guys just got a ruling that says that that judge had no jurisdiction to allow him to be released. Are there plans now to rearrest him and continue with deportation proceedings?
There are. And it looks like he'll go to Algeria. That's what the thought is right now. It's a reminder for those who are in this country on a visa or on a green card. You're a guest in this country. Act like it. It is a privilege, not a right, to be in this country to live or to study. And if you are pushing propaganda that relishes the killings of Americans or promotes terrorists, doors that way.
Yep. There's the door. Adios. That needs to be the tone for all of this at this point. Yes, American citizens have a First Amendment right. That I will not take away from them. But this is not an American. This is a man who was here as a privilege, or I should say as maybe not a privilege. We were very kind to him. We were very kind to him. And he's obviously an empathizer for Islamic terrorists. And we'll leave it at that. So hopefully this sticks. You know, these nonprofits, these big liberal groups have been fighting for him. And they're not going to stop. They never do, of course. They never do. I want to play clip 11 for you now because Gavin Newsom, and we're going to talk about it too later in the show, but Gavin Newsom is at the World Economic Forum right now, and he's very fired up in regards to pushing back. He's not happy with President Trump because President Trump did diss him. But most importantly, he's not very happy when it comes to having to explain what happened during the California wildfires, because then he'd have to explain his own failures as governor, and whether or not those were intentional or not, well, that's still up in the air. Most of us do feel like you can't fail that badly. And Gavin Newsom does that quite often. But he was actually asked about this at the World Economic Forum yesterday. Take a listen to clip 11.
Look, are there problems?
You're supporting the mayor of L.A. for re-election after these terrible fires that a lot of your citizens do feel was part in part because of government mismanagement. Do you just reject that narrative that the government isn't anything to do with these
things? I absolutely accept that. We all should be held to a higher level of accountability in terms of our governance, and I think there's many areas of reforms that are necessary and so many areas of reforms that were underway. We can get into the specifics of any one of these issues, but the general notion that in the middle of winter, with 100-mile-an-hour winds, we're attached to a fire that somehow, by the way, there were 16 major fires in Southern California over a two-week period, that somehow that had to do with fire hydrants, is rather preposterous.
Yeah, it probably had to do with the fact that you didn't fill up the water reservoir as you were instructed several times, or clean up your forest, which obviously President Trump has been telling you about for, like, what, 5 years now? So no empathy there. No empathy there. This guy is a forever troll, and it's really just infuriating that he continues to go out there and pretend like he has no part in any of this. No part. Again, folks, we're going to keep our eye on this. We're going to be talking about Newsom as well, because Newsom is playing the victim card on a lot of fronts. And we look forward to talking about that in a little bit with our panel. Larry Taunton will be joining us, as well as Jetica Pounds, a.k.a. Data Republican, in the third hour of the program. And speaking of all of that, I also wanted to tell you, this is a little bit of a happier story, I guess. Let's talk about Barron Trump for a second. We're now learning details behind a story that is quite incredible. Barron Trump saved a female friend of his when she was being assaulted by an ex-boyfriend. Apparently, this female friend's life was on the line, and she apparently had tried calling Barron. Apparently, it was a FaceTime call to tell him that she was in distress back in January 2025. During the call, he apparently heard her screaming and being beaten by her ex-boyfriend, who was allegedly jealous of his friendship or her friendship with Barron Trump. Barron told the 911, or I guess in the UK it would be the 999 operator, "I just got a call from a girl I know. She's getting beaten up. It's really an emergency, please," and gave her address. Police responded, and the woman later testified during court that Barron, quote, "saved my life, calling the timely call a sign from God." Barron explained he heard her crying, blows for about 10 to 15 seconds before the call cut off. And so he did, in fact, call police, who apparently saved her, which is incredible, which is absolutely incredible. So a bit of a good story. You know, Barron's kind of a mystery. We don't really hear from him much, but probably for the best that he's so young. But that's a really, really incredible young man. And I'm sure his parents are very proud of him. I'm sure they're very proud of him. Not many people are able to raise children to this level of excellence. He seems like an absolute gentleman. And we love hearing the updates on what Barron Trump is doing. But he's an incredible, incredible young man. And this is by far one of my favorite moments of Barron Trump. As many of you guys remember, when he was being inaugurated, it was a big night as well. All right, folks, we've got a lot more to discuss in just a bit. So buckle up. More show kicking off in the second hour. And as many of you guys know, Jack Smith is making his way right now to the congressional hearing where he's going to be testifying publicly. Once that begins, we'll bring that right to you because, of course, there's probably going to be some really good gems dropped in his testimony. But in the meantime, folks, head on over right now to thealexjonesstore.com because with every purchase you make over at the shop, we're going to give you a free T-shirt. This is a limited edition shirt. It is a $40 value that you get for free. No minimum required over at thealexjonesstore.com to get this T-shirt. Of course, folks, it says thank you because when you support us over at thealexjonesstore.com, you keep us up and running. And we can't do this without you. So if you'd like to claim your free gift of a free T-shirt, you got to head on over right now to thealexjonesstore.com. Make a purchase, no minimum required, and you'll get this shirt for free. Again, every order will get this T-shirt for free. And there's a ton of discounts going on right now at the shop. So head on over there, click around, see what you're interested in. And thank you for supporting us. We greatly appreciate it, as always, over at thealexjonesstore.com. More underway next.
You were just telling me that you had a brain disease, and what did you do to fix it?
I found this guy's a functional medicine guy, and he got me on methylene blue, and that instantly stopped everything.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I take it every day as well. And
yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic. And so this guy's injecting in 1890, injects these rats with it, and then does an autopsy on these things. And their brain, the brainstem, every single nerve is blue. So he discovered this methylene blue has an affinity for neuronal tissue. So he says, well, it's sucking into neurons and working in the body. So we started putting it in humans. And we found out it's an MAOI, which helps with depression and anxiety and all kinds of life stress and stuff. It is so incredible that it acts as an electron donor to mitochondria, especially your neuronal mitochondria. So it helps you produce more ATP, and it helps you get rid of this stuff called reactive oxygen species. So you have an oxygen molecule. It should have two hydrogens on it. And like your body's job is to convert stuff into water so you can pee it out. So if you get an oxygen molecule, it's got 4, 5, 1, it's a reactive oxygen, which we call free radicals. So methylene blue goes in there and balances a lot of those things out in your brain and your nervous system. So it is a miracle, and it's been proven for 100 years. You know, it's one of the most well-proven drugs out there.
The strongest medical-grade methylene blue. And this is what I'm on. Total mitochondria cleaning. Next level energy. This is amazing. And you want to know what I'm on? Iris CMOS Shilajit. This right here. Look at that. That is power. I'm on intermittent fasting. I'm going to eat at 3 o'clock today. And I stopped eating crap food. Stopped drinking. That's what I'm on right there.
American Journal. We're excited you're jumping on with us. Second hour of the program about to kick off. We're waiting for Jack Smith to make his way to his congressional hearing. When he begins to speak, we'll bring it straight to you, of course. I've got a lot that I want to hear about. Got a lot that I want to hear about, so we look forward to talking about that in a little bit. We also looked forward to seeing what unravels in front of another congressional hearing that is expected to start around 2:30 p.m. Eastern time. Now, this one will be interesting because it's going to be a group of health insurance CEOs. They're going to get grilled, obviously. Democrats are going to want to make it look like they're fighting for the average American. And so are Republicans. They're going to try to get their little sound bites in. But I think this is going to be really important, given the fact that President Trump is trying to just completely toss out Obamacare and try to, instead of giving these billions of dollars to these health insurance companies, give it to the American people so that they could purchase these markets on the free market. It's quite the complex issue, though, so Sally Pipes will be joining us in the third hour of the show detailing what that all actually means. And again, we'll be bringing you to Davos as well in the third hour of the program to detail what's been happening over there. That are Republicans on the ground, so is Larry Taunton as well. And they have a lot that they want to tell us about, which we look forward to. You know, it's so crazy that I constantly am fact-checking both, you know, a lot of media outlets. I try my best to get both sides of a story when a media outlet does push out a story. DHS yesterday, I got to give credit where credit's due. I know I don't like government, but DHS has by far one of the best communications teams. And the reason why I'm telling you that is within 2 minutes of me trying to fact check the Associated Press report that dropped yesterday, they had a response and they sent it over my way super, super fast. Super fast. It's all in regards to the AP, which was reporting yesterday that there was some memo that they alleged that they got their hands on. And they claimed that in that memo, it was pretty much telling immigration officers that they could enter homes without warrants. Now, again, there's obviously a legal thing here, but the caption itself, the headline itself, which was trying to intentionally get these people in trouble. They intentionally drop out this very controversial headline. And then most Americans, just because they're not very bright, I'm talking about the Democrats here, are not going to read into the story. So I reached out to the AP, to the DHS specifically, and DHS did say that there are legal grounds that do take place here. Trisha McLaughlin giving us a statement yesterday about that. You know, and this is the problem with all these outlets. I mean, they're just so full of it. They're so full of it. The goal here is to get everyone enraged and to not put out the facts. This is all about your emotions, not about your logic. And that's what they were doing yesterday. Trisha McLaughlin saying, you know, every illegal alien who DHS serves administrative warrants to, I-205s, have had full due process and a final order for removal from an immigration judge. And again, the officers issuing these administrative warrants also have found probable cause. For decades, the Supreme Court and Congress have recognized this. And of course, Democrats are trying to spin it. They are trying their very best to spin it. Now, when we look over right now, we got, actually, we could probably show you, and we'll bring you to it in about 2 minutes. But Jim Jordan, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee right now, is speaking. And we're expected to hear from Jack Smith. Jack Smith is testifying again publicly, something that apparently he said he wanted. Unfortunately, though, House Republicans did not give him that. They did the closed door deposition, maybe hoping to get something for criminal charges. Maybe that's why they did it. But they did drop the transcript on literally the New Year's Eve, I believe it was. So folks, we're going to keep our eye on that, bring you to the congressional hearing once it begins, which it looks like it is. So buckle up. We've got a great hour heading your way. And we'll take you straight there. In the meantime, though, head on over to thealexjonesstore.com. We've got incredible discounts going on right now on your favorite items. And you get a free T-shirt for supporting us. We're going to support you and give you some free gear over at thealexjonesstore.com. No minimum required.
The entire world is racing into the fourth turning and the greatest quickening our species has seen in 10,000 years of recorded history. You know you're in a war, right? And it's a declared war. The globalists have declared war on Team Humanity. They've declared war on the God that made us. It is not incredible. It is not heroic. It is not amazing to fight this. It is survival. This is the priority. This is the real world. This is game time. This is the crossroads of human destiny right now. Right now. And I see a bunch of other people not realizing how desperate the situation is. We need maximum urgency. We're up against the most evil people the world's ever seen. Don't you understand that? I don't want anybody to go out and be physically violent. I want you to kill with truth. Kill with your will. Kill, kill, kill their lies.
You're watching The American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello. Watch it live right now at band.video.
I'll probably go to it. Welcome to The American Journal. We're excited that you guys are joining us today. Jim Jordan is speaking right now in that House Judiciary Committee hearing where Jack Smith will be testifying. Let's just pop in and see what the chairman's talking about right now. Take a listen.
The Capitol, again, nothing. Then it was impeachment too. No secret hearings here because they didn't have any hearings. It was the snap impeachment, and the Senate trial actually took place after President Trump wasn't in office. Then, of course, it was Alvin Bragg, who said before he got elected district attorney that there was no case here. Then he gets elected and changes his mind when the left starts pressuring him to go after President Trump. He hires Michael Colangelo, former Democrat National Committee consultant, and the number three guy at the Department of Justice. And then, of course, it's Bonnie Willis and Nathan Wade in Fulton County, Georgia. We actually deposed Mr. Wade, one of the most interesting depositions I've sat through. We said to him, you know, you billed taxpayers in Georgia thousands of dollars for meetings in D.C. with the January 6th committee and with the Biden administration. And we asked him some questions. Who'd you talk to, Mr. Wade? He couldn't remember. We said, where'd you meet? Did you meet the Capitol? Did you meet the White House? Where'd you meet? Couldn't remember that either. We said, were these meetings in person, on the phone, or did you have a Zoom meeting? Couldn't remember, couldn't remember, couldn't remember. We finally just asked him, did you really come to D.C. and meet people? He said, oh, yeah, I came, and I billed the taxpayers. I know I came. Just no idea who he talked to or what he did. And then there was the raid on President Trump's home, you know, where they searched Barron's room and the First Lady's closet. In our deposition with Stephen D'Antuono, head of the FBI Washington field office, he told us none of the normal process, none of the normal protocol was followed in the investigation. He said, first of all, the case was run out of D.C. Normally, you run it out of the Miami field office. No, no, no. We're going to run out of D.C. He said he recommended, and the people in the FBI at the time in the Washington field office recommended they give the president notice before they do the search, or at least when they got there, before they start the search, call the president's lawyers, ask them to come there and meet them and conduct the search together. Again, the answer from Maine Justice was no. Which brings us back to Mr. Smith. On November 18th, 2022, 3 days after President Trump announces he's running for president, Attorney General Garland names Jack Smith special counsel. One of the first things Mr. Smith does is put on his team the very people responsible for the raid on President Trump's home. The very people. And then Jack Smith also puts on his team the people responsible for getting the phone records of dozens of members of Congress. People like Thomas Wyndham, when we deposed him, took the Fifth 71 times. We've actually referred him to the Justice Department for obstructing our investigation. Jack Smith then gets a gag order in his investigation on President Trump from Judge Chutkan without filing a single affidavit with the court from a witness or a potential witness that they felt threatened by statements from the president. Stop and think about it. Jack Smith restricts the speech of the former president while he's a candidate for president. Thank goodness Mr. Smith was slapped down on appeal and the order was changed. In fact, just 2 weeks ago, the Washington Post editorial page, Jack Smith would have blown a hole in the First Amendment. I just want to read two sentences from this. Mr. Smith seemed unconcerned about interfering in the democratic process by seeking to muzzle a candidate for high office. Three appellate judges, all nominated by Democrat presidents, ruled that Mr. Smith's proposed gag order infringed on President Trump's First Amendment rights. And of course they did. And this wasn't the only time Mr. Smith lost in court. In the classified documents case in Miami, Judge Cannon held that Mr. Smith was not permitted to be special counsel. Jack Smith was never properly appointed. In fact, he couldn't be properly appointed because he was never confirmed by the Senate for any position in the executive branch as the law requires. Here's what Judge Cannon stated. Quote, the special counsel's position effectively usurps that important legislative authority, transferring it to a head of department and in the process threatening the structural liberty inherent in the separation of powers. And of course, on July 1st, 2024, the United States Supreme Court ruled that President Trump...
All right, I'm going to step in on this. I had the displeasure of having to sit back and listen to the deposition that was given by Jack Smith. And Jack Smith did say that he does not regret trying to slap that gag order on President Trump because he deemed that President Trump was a threat to not only him and the prosecutors, but also to the judge and to the jury. I mean, they also claimed that he would have tried to intimidate all those that were involved in the investigation. That's the reason why he went after there to get that gag order. Now, once Jack Smith begins to speak, we'll bring you straight there because that's obviously going to be very, very important. But we will listen in, of course, and if anything else happens that's important, we'll bring it to you. But again, it's just, you know, Jim Jordan getting his moment and kind of give you some overview as to what you could expect throughout today's hearing. I want to get to this clip 13, though, because why not talk about Don Lemon and how dumb he is? You know, as we sit here and we watch the one arrest that was just made by the one person who's accused of being the organizer of that so-called protest inside of that church in Minnesota. Again, the DOJ just saying we arrested one person, but Don Lemon would be a great person to arrest. And you probably should arrest him now so that you actually set the record straight, because Don Lemon described it not as a protest, but as an operation, and then openly admitted that, yeah, we're actually intimidating people and it's okay. In clip 13, Don Lemon's trying to go around and ask people about immigration and about illegal aliens. And he's trying to make it seem like illegal aliens didn't actually commit a crime to get into this country. But there's two people who probably aren't even well versed on the matter, but understand common sense here, and they kind of schooled Don Lemon. Take a listen.
Okay, crossing the border illegally is not a crime?
No, it's not a criminal act. Okay. It's a misdemeanor.
So why are they being sent back and saying that they're breaking the law?
That's the point.
Okay, as somebody that...
We don't know if they're breaking the law because they won't tell. There's no due process. Where's the evidence? That's the whole point. And if they are breaking the law, most people will say, okay, then they need to go if they're criminals. But if they're not, why are they being rounded up and sent out? Especially when he promised to deport the criminals. And now he's not doing that.
Yeah, I don't think we're going...
Misdemeanor is not a crime.
Is what you're saying. Yeah. So misdemeanor is not a crime?
It's not a criminal act, no. If you get charged with a misdemeanor, that's not
so
a criminal act.
So why can't charge at all then, if it's not a criminal act?
Because we have different levels of crime. Everything is not the same.
So it is crime.
No.
It's just different levels.
We have different levels of... I shouldn't say crime, but it's not. You're not. It's not a crime. You're not breaking the law. I mean, you are breaking the law, but it's not a criminal act.
So it's breaking the law.
No,
law,
you're not breaking the law.
Misdemeanor is not breaking the law.
No.
If you're speeding, drinking, get pulled over, DUI.
That's not a criminal. Well, no, if you're speeding is a misdemeanor.
It's a misdemeanor. Right. So still breaking the law.
Okay, well, if you want to qualify that, we're doing semantics.
Because
but what I'm saying, but what I'm trying to tell you is everything is not the same. It's all not one thing.
But is it the law?
What? Is it the law that what?
Is it law to come
is
over
there
legally?
A law?
Is there a law?
There are rules that processes that you should follow. Yes, so you're breaking rules. You're breaking the rules, but you're not necessarily breaking a law.
So what happens if you break the rules?
Then you get. You suffer the consequences, but the consequences should not. It's, look, no one is saying no one should suffer the consequences. You guys are getting things mixed up.
Oh, you're getting things mixed up, you peasants. Don Lemon knows everything. They're not breaking the law, just a rule, just a little rule. What's a rule? Well, probably a law, but don't talk about that. Don't talk about that. See, this is what the left does. They try to make it seem like it's a civil matter. Oh, it's a civil matter. Nothing major, nothing major. He just decided not to abide by the rules. The rules are we are a country with borders. We are allowed to decide who comes into our country. And when an invader decides to just stroll on in, guess what? They're breaking the law. And they always go around and tell you, oh, we're just trying to seek asylum. They're not trying to seek asylum. Don Lemon is not a journalist, folks. You get that. I get that. But his defense is always going to be he's a journalist just reporting on the news, nonpartisan. See, this is the difference between Don Lemon and the rest of the independent journalists is, you know, independent journalists are able to garner a audience because the audience trusts them. But if you look at Don Lemon's numbers, no one's watching his content. In fact, when we repost it, and this is why I love the fact that we don't actually allow him to get the clicks. Everyone's pulling his video and posting it separately. Normally I'd say, don't do that. Independent journalists need to be supported, but don't put money into Don Lemon's pockets. You're going to put a clip out there. Word of advice, screen record, and then post it separately. Don't give that man any monetization. All right, I'm looking right now over at the Judiciary Committee where Jack Smith is present. And Jamie Raskin is actually talking right now to, it looks like, Smith. So let's take a listen to what kind of nonsense he's spewing.
In Donald Trump's eyes and why he says you belong in prison, you found, and I quote from your sworn testimony before the committee, you found proof beyond a reasonable doubt that President Trump engaged in a criminal scheme to overturn the results of the 2020 election and to prevent the lawful transfer of power. When asked whether you believe the evidence was enough to obtain a criminal conviction against Donald Trump at trial, you had a one-word answer, yes. When asked if Donald Trump was responsible for the violence that took place at the Capitol on January 6th, you said, our view of the evidence was that he caused it and that he exploited it and that it was foreseeable to him. You found that Trump knew he had lost the election. How? Well, his own attorney general, William Barr, repeatedly told him so and described all of Trump's theories as BS. Trump's top campaign advisors told him he lost the election. Vice President Pence told him he lost the election. More than 60 federal, state, and court decisions, including 8 rendered by judges he appointed to the bench, rejected every outlandish election fraud and corruption claim that he made. Trump himself even privately acknowledged it, gesturing to Joe Biden on TV and saying, quote, can you believe I lost to that effing guy? He knew he lost, but he threw everything into his big lie, which some people, even in this room to this day, will stand by and swear by. Well, when the big lie wasn't enough to convince officials like Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, a Republican, to commit election fraud and just fine Trump 11,780 votes, when it wasn't enough to convince Trump's DOJ to, quote, just call the election corrupt and leave the rest to me and the House Republicans, when it wasn't enough to force Vice President Mike Pence to announce and then exercise lawless powers to reject electoral college votes and use counterfeit slates to anoint Trump the winner, that's when Trump incited mass violence on January 6th. While more than 140 officers were being brutally assaulted by Trump's mob, while rioters beat them with flagpoles and sprayed them with chemical agents and crushed them in doorways, and while they chanted, hang Mike Pence, and chased the vice president out of the Capitol, Trump and his team worked the phones, calling not the National Guard, which was under the direct unilateral control of Donald Trump, but calling members of Congress, urging them to delay certification and to nullify the election results. Special Counsel Smith, you pursued the facts. You followed every applicable law, ethics rule, and DOJ regulation. Your decisions were reviewed by the public integrity section. You acted based solely on the facts. The opposite of Donald Trump, who now has purported to take over the Department of Justice. He's in charge of the whole thing under his unitary executive theory, and he acts openly, purely based on political vendetta and motives of personal revenge, and he doesn't deny it. Our colleagues have complained about the special counsel's review of toll records, which are phone records like a phone bill, showing only the timing and duration of calls and containing no content, no substance whatsoever from the calls. But those records were lawfully subpoenaed because Donald Trump made those members of Congress relevant to the investigation. It was Trump who chose to call them to advance his criminal scheme. As you testified, Mr. Smith, if Donald Trump had chosen to call a number of Democratic senators, we would have gotten toll records for them, too. I trust our colleagues get the point, because America certainly gets the point. There is much Mr. Smith still can't talk about, though we know he badly wants to. His investigation developed what he calls powerful evidence that Trump stole documents containing our country's most sensitive secrets, hoarded them in the ballrooms and the bathrooms of his well-trafficked Mar-a-Lago social club. He showed them off to visitors, and then he obstructed a federal investigation.
All right, Jamie Raskin doing what he does best, trying to sell the American people a plate of BS. And the rest of you are probably just too smart to even buy it. He is a liar. He is a coward. He is a treasonous pig. And he is trying his very best to carry on this lie. This lie has resulted in, again, no actual results. Millions of dollars of your money and my money went to pay for this BS political persecution. Jamie Raskin doing his very best to justify all of this when there's really no justification for it at all. At all. When he sits there and he shows you all the boxes that they found at Mar-a-Lago, keep in mind a lot of those images came after the FBI pulled these boxes out. Remember the pages that they scattered across the table? Well, that was staged. That was staged. And a reminder, by the way, folks, President Trump was president, so he has the authority to declassify whatever he wants. They love to sit there and point to him, but he was president. You know who wasn't president when he decided to take classified documents? Joe Biden. Remember when he stored it behind a vehicle? What was it, a Corvette or some stupid thing that he had in his garage? Didn't care, though. Didn't care. And so remember all of this. Remember the nonsense they're trying to sell you on. As if President Trump didn't have the authority to declassify those documents, take those documents with him. Every president does. Every president does. Ah, that's where you would store classified documents. Again, he's the vice president at the top of it all when he was taking that picture. Keep that in mind. Didn't have the authority to do that. But did it anyway. Why? Well, because his family was selling our secrets. We know this. We know this. And then Hunter Biden just thinks he's immune and doesn't have to ever be held accountable. And if it wasn't true, why need that Biden? Hunter Biden need that pardon? Probably because it's not true on his part when he sits there and he lies. If you saw the Sean Ryan interview, I was just talking to someone yesterday about it, and I was fired up. I was so angry because there was very little pushback as he continues to go out there and spew lies, lies, lies. And there's no pushback as Ryan's just sitting there like, wow, the laptop wasn't real. The Biden family literally took home classified documents, and nobody seems to care about any of this. Stored it in a garage. See, the president, President Trump, when he came back under his first term, after his first term, I should say, he got the authorization from all the proper agencies, and they went through everything to make sure it was being safely stored. And again, we know that the evidence that they put out on display, that they put into those documents, we know that it was staged. We know that it was staged. The mainstream media doesn't want you to know that, though. Jamie Raskin doesn't want you knowing that, though. You think President Trump was really shuffling guests from Mar-a-Lago into the bathroom, showing them classified documents? He's hoping you're just as stupid as he is. All right, let's take things over to the committee of hearing right now because Jack Smith just started speaking. Let's take a listen.
Chairman Jordan, Ranking Member Raskin, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to discuss my work as special counsel. I love my country, and believe deeply in the core principles upon which it was founded. For nearly three decades, I've served as a career prosecutor in both Republican and Democratic administrations. I've handled cases ranging from domestic assault and gang violence to public corruption and election crimes across the United States, and I've prosecuted war crimes overseas. I am not a politician, and I have no partisan loyalties. My career has been dedicated to serving our country by upholding the rule of law. Throughout my public service, my approach has always been the same. Follow the facts and the law without fear or favor. Experienced prosecutors know that specific case outcomes are beyond our control. Our responsibility is to do the right thing, the right way, for the right reasons. These principles have guided me through my career, including as special counsel. I'm proud of the work my team did, and I appreciate the opportunity to appear here today to correct false and misleading narratives about our work. During my tenure as special counsel, we followed Justice Department policies, we observed legal requirements, and took actions based on the facts and the law. I made my decisions without regard to President Trump's political association, activities, beliefs, or candidacy in the 2024 election. President Trump was charged because the evidence established that he willfully broke the law, the very laws he took an oath to uphold. Grand juries in two separate districts reached this conclusion based on his actions, as alleged in the indictments they returned. Rather than accept his defeat in the 2020 election, President Trump engaged in a criminal scheme to overturn the results and prevent the lawful transfer of power. After leaving office in January of 21, President Trump illegally kept classified documents at his Mar-a-Lago social club and repeatedly tried to obstruct justice to conceal his continued retention of those documents. Highly sensitive national security information was held in a ballroom and a bathroom. As I testify before the committee today, I want to be clear. I stand by my decisions as special counsel, including the decision to bring charges against President Trump. Our investigation developed proof beyond a reasonable doubt that President Trump engaged in criminal activity. If asked whether to prosecute a former president based on the same facts today, I would do so regardless of whether that president was a Democrat or a Republican. No one should be above the law in this country, and the law required that he be held to account, so that is what I did. To have done otherwise on the facts of these cases would have been to shirk my duties as a prosecutor and as a public servant, of which I had no intention of doing. I remain grateful for the counsel, judgment, and advice of my team. President Trump has sought to seek revenge against career prosecutors, FBI agents, and support staff simply for having worked on these cases. To vilify and seek retribution against these people is wrong. Those dedicated public servants are the best of us, and it has been a privilege to serve with them. After nearly 30 years of public service, including in international settings.
All right, we're going to hit the pause button here because we're up against a hard break. We will bring you straight back to that hearing in just a few moments. Don't go anywhere. In the meantime, head on over to thealexjonesstore.com right now. We're giving away a free T-shirt with every purchase as a thank you to you for supporting us. So again, thealexjonesstore.com. Get a free T-shirt, no minimum required, folks. We'll bring you straight back to that hearing in just a few moments. Don't go anywhere.
Every guest I have had in studio in the last 6 months, I've given our medical grade USP methylene Bluetooth. I don't even tell them what it's going to do. I just say, here, take this, see what happens. Within 15 to 30 minutes, every guest says they've gotten energy like they've never experienced. Clarity, focus. It's like a fog has lifted. They're Their critical thinking goes to the next level. And that's what the science shows it does in our cells. It's not a stimulant, but it has that effect because it electrochemically turns up the literal electrochemical electricity in the body. And so he was here a few months ago, didn't know what it was, known me for a long time, said sure he'll take it. He heard Kennedy talk about it, RFK Jr. He took it, and it was so game-changing. In the last few months, he ran out of the bottle I gave him, so he wanted more. And the first thing he wanted was to take some more before we even went live on air. That's how amazing this is. You want to do the plug, and I appreciate this.
I do. I came in.
Because you came in saying, I want more methylene blue, and then I looked over when you went on the air. You'd already slurped some down. Your mouth was blue. I said, you're Papa Smurf. So, Patrick Byrne.
How much is the correct amount to put in? About that much?
Yeah, Kennedy does three droppers. This is really strong.
You gave me some last time. I think you gave it on air. You totally feel the difference. I used the bottle you gave me. It's great. It totally makes it. You can feel it. It just keeps your energy level up and plateaued without bonks. So I love it. I used the bottle you gave me, and I came back to Austin just to pick up a pump.
Well, you can always get it at thealexjonesshow.com. It will certainly give you all you want. We also have the capsules, but we have the strongest medical grade. It's super good for you. It cleans out your mitochondria. Most people get instant energy, like 99% of people, but it's the workout. It's what it does for your skin, your libido. So you've been on it a few months.
I just had that one bottle, but...
And you're saying no letdown. That's the best part. It's not an amphetamine. It's not a speed, but it feels like that.
I see RFKs on it. Yeah. I just used up that bottle, and so for a couple of weeks, I had this great energy, but it's not speed. It's not caffeine. It's nothing like that. It's doing something else for you. So I really...
Well, it skips three levels of the oxygenation process in the cells. It's just next level. It's incredible. And they've suppressed it. And my medical doctor 6 years ago said, get on it. And I said, get USP grade. It didn't do anything. And then our sponsor got this super strong one. I'm like, oh, let me try it. Whoa. I mean, it funds the operation books. But I'm telling you, if you haven't gotten our USP grade, real USP grade, Ultimethylene Blue, theoxygenshore.com, you are missing out. It is so good for you. 99% of people, it's more than that. Like, it was like 400 people, maybe two or three didn't feel it. Some get totally freaked out that they're going crazy. So talk to your physician first. Take a very low dose the first time. You can't take it if you're on SSRIs and other things. It is amazing. TheAlexJonesShow.com. So,
yeah, it's not psychosomatic. It's not psychological. You feel it. You feel it.
Well, I didn't tell you what you were going to feel. How fast did it kick in and what did you feel?
I felt it by the time, the end of the show. By the time I got, the last time I was here, I felt it probably by the end of the show or by the time I got my car. You feel instant energy, but without the jitteriness of caffeine and focus. What I felt was focus, mental focus. It's probably like why you are as intense as you are, Alex.
It's made me more intense. Well, I was taking full doses at first and then working out so hard that, you know, I had to go.
You look jacked.
Well, I've cut back. The point is, I only take it every 3 days now because it's crazy. Everything we sell, I want is working and is good. That's what I want. I mean, I'll be like a restaurant. I ain't going to serve dog to people. They're not going to come back. But I mean, this thing is the most dramatic, quick acting, and it's good for you. It's just insane. And if I could just get a few more percentage of the audience to buy it, all our problems would be solved. Patrick Byrne was totally blown away by it, as every other guest we've given it to has been blown away.
You're tuned in to The American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome to The American Journal. We are back and we are keeping our eye right now on Jack Smith, who's testifying in front of the Judiciary Committee right now. Let's take a listen back in.
Telling them these are members of Congress?
When we secured these toll record subpoenas, it was done consistent with department policy. You're correct in that that policy has since changed.
They changed the policy based upon the actions that you took. Similarly, you issued a gag order against President Trump that the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals vacated as overbroad. Is that correct?
Well, the D.C. Court of Appeals, in passing on that order, found that it was justified. They narrowed the order, but they confirmed that the phenomenon—
They narrowed the order because it was overbroad. In addition to that, you sought an early trial date that the district court rejected. And when you presented your prosecution memo to Attorney General Garland, it's been reported that he was visibly unimpressed and expressed First Amendment concerns. So, Mr. Smith, looking at the record, I see that you were reversed and rebuked by the Department of Justice itself, by the Attorney General, by the Solicitor General, by multiple district court justices, judges, by the Court of Appeals, and by the U.S. Supreme Court itself. So my final question is, do you believe that you made any mistakes? Do you have any regrets as to how you conducted this investigation?
If I have any regret, it would be not expressing enough appreciation for my staff who worked so hard in these investigations. We followed the facts and the law. These people who worked for me sacrificed endlessly and have endured way too much for just doing their job. So if anything, I wish that I had thanked them.
Time of the gentleman.
No mistakes. There's that humility. Mr. Chair, I yield back.
Yeah, time of the gentleman's right. The chair now recognizes the ranking member for 5 minutes.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the good gentleman from California certainly knows, because he was a student of mine, that lawyers go to court and sometimes they win motions and sometimes they lose motions. And there's no crime in any of that. And I'm just sorry that you had to be lectured about humility and restraint by a politician, because we might not be best poised to lecture you on those particular virtues. But let's go to the toll record, since that's been raised, Mr. Smith. First of all, Congress has allowed toll records to be subpoenaed. This committee has actually tried to limit it over the years, and the senators who are whining the most over on the Republican side in the Senate, they never went along with our determination to try to limit the government's ability to subpoena toll records. So it's perfectly lawful what you did. Explain, why did you want those toll records?
We wanted to conduct a thorough investigation of the matters that was assigned to me, including attempts to interfere with a lawful transfer of power. The conspiracy that we were investigating, it was relevant to get toll records to understand the scope of that conspiracy, who they were seeking to coerce, who they were seeking to influence, who was seeking to help them.
And that's normal investigative practice, right?
It, in conducting a criminal investigation, securing non-content toll records, as you described, is a common practice in almost any complex conspiracy.
Okay, let's go to something else that I've been hearing over the last week by our colleagues as they've eagerly anticipated your arrival here. They've been saying that there's some kind of First Amendment defense that Donald Trump would have had to the crimes you indicted him for. Is there a valid First Amendment defense to defrauding the public? Is there a valid First Amendment defense to disrupting a federal proceeding? Is there a valid First Amendment defense to violating the voting rights of the people and cheating the public out of a fair election?
The First Amendment is something we took seriously in our investigation, but the First Amendment does not protect speech that facilitates a crime. Speech that is used to facilitate a crime, a fraud crime in particular, is not protected under the First Amendment. The Supreme Court precedent on that is clear. This is an issue that we litigated before the district court, and the district court ruled, as I just stated, that it is not, in fact, protected.
And the case law is perfectly clear on this, right? All frauds are perpetrated by speech, right?
Yes.
All conspiracies are perpetrated by speech. So just because your criminal conduct is brigaded with speech doesn't somehow mean you've got a First Amendment defense against trying to overthrow the government. I mean, the people who attacked the police officers on January 6th were chanting, "Hang Mike Pence." I suppose that was political speech, or they were saying, "Stop the steal." Does that mean they've got a First Amendment defense to violent assault against the officers?
It does not.
William Barr, by the way, was somebody who was perfectly clear about that. The attorney, Donald Trump's own attorney general, said there's no freedom of speech that you have to engage in a conspiracy to overthrow an election, to commit crime. He was perfectly clear about that. Back in those days, in fact, lots of people on that side of the aisle, including my good friend, the chairman, denounced the violence that took place on January 6th. The cats got their tongue these days. My friend Chairman Jordan said, what happened last week was terrible, was tragic. It's as wrong can be, he said. Republicans, we know all political violence is wrong. I asked my friend Chairman Jordan at a rules hearing, are you also not interested in what happened to us on January 6th? He said, of course, everyone's interested in holding people accountable who did wrong. The FBI is doing that. The Justice Department is doing that, appropriately so. What do you think about the attack on the Department of Justice and the special counsel for doing your jobs?
I think the attack is unjustified. I think the people who worked with me as career public servants are people, they're part of the reason I've been a prosecutor for so long is to work with people like that, not just the prosecutors in my office, but also the agents, FBI agents who are heroes, who have served their country not only as agents, but also overseas. I think those attacks are unwarranted based on the facts, and I think that they have no basis in who we are as Americans, as a country. I don't see attacking people like that as anything appropriate.
Thank you, and Mr. Chairman, I yield back to you.
Gentleman yields back. Mr. Smith, is Cassidy Hutchinson a liar? She was their star witness. January 6th committee, their star witness in one of those staged and choreographed hearings they paid the former president of ABC News to put together. She was, in fact, the only witness at this special primetime hearing, Tuesday, June 28th, 2022, 8 o'clock in the evening, and she told some stories. I mean, these were some stories. She talked about President lunged across the back seat, grabbed the steering wheel, tried to drive the car to the Capitol. And I just want to know, you think she was lying?
Chairman Jordan, my assessment of that particular issue is that with respect to the testimony about someone the president lunging towards the driver, My recollection of her testimony about that is that it was secondhand. She said she'd heard that from somebody.
You familiar with the name Tony Ornato?
I'm sorry.
You familiar with the name Tony Ornato?
Yes.
White House Deputy Chief of Operations, Deputy Chief of Staff for Operations, right? You remember what he said about it?
As I sit here right now, I do not.
Yeah, he said it didn't happen. How about Bobby Engle? You familiar with that name?
Yes, I am.
Secret Service agent who was actually in the car that day. You know what he said? He said it didn't happen. And they both said the first time they ever heard this story was when Ms. Hutchinson testified in the primetime hearing as their star witness of the January 6th committee. By the way, did you ever confirm her testimony about this particular incident?
Conducted, as I said before, our own independent investigation of all aspects of the case that we thought was relevant. We, attorneys from my office.
Did you ever confirm it? That's a simple question.
Well, we interviewed her, I should say, attorneys in my office before.
Did you ever confirm the president leaping across the seat, grabbing the steering wheel, this whole concoction she brought up in the January 6th hearing? Did you ever confirm that?
Right. We interviewed another firsthand witness. Who was in the car, who did not confirm that okay. had happened, but also
in your deposition to the committee last month, Mr. Smith, you said this. My recollection with Ms. Hutchinson was a number of the things that she gave evidence on were secondhand hearsay. You remember making that statement to us last month in the deposition?
I did, and I was referring particularly to what we're talking about now.
Yeah, and you also said Ms. Hutchinson, regarding this particular claim, was a second or even third-hand witness. We ask you, if you were a defense attorney, how would you handle cross-examining her if she was on the witness stand? And you said, if I were a defense attorney and Ms. Hutchinson were a witness, the first thing I would do was seek to preclude her testimony because it was hearsay. You remember saying all that?
Yes, that's correct, sir.
That's correct, right? Were you going to put her on the witness stand if you ever got to trial?
We had not made final determinations as to who we were going to call as a witness. We had a large...
You were still considering her?
We had a large choice of witnesses in this case.
Are you familiar with what Washington Post reporters Carol Lenning and Aaron Davis said in their book? They did this book, 300-some pages book, on chronicling the whole investigation of the Justice Department. And here's what they said on page 310. They said Jack Smith had wondered whether some of Hutchinson's claims might be relied upon at trial. Still, at one point, Smith told the elections team he wasn't ready to give up on Hutchinson's account. Ultimately, however, Trump administration officials uniformly, fiercely disputed her accounts under oath. Prosecutors on your team told Smith they wouldn't want to use Hutchinson as a witness in court, and Smith agreed. Are Carol Lenning and Aaron Davis, who wrote this, are they lying?
My recollection is that I certainly had not made any final determinations about who we were going to call.
And that's the point. That is the point. The fact that they used her in a primetime hearing and you won't rule out using her, didn't rule out using her, putting her on the witness stand when everybody knows she wasn't telling the truth, that says it all. That's the degree the left and Democrats were willing to go to get President Trump, putting on the witness stand someone everybody knows is making it up. Everybody knows that, and you were willing to do it. By the way, you know how many times Cassie Hutchinson was mentioned in their report, the January 6th report? Any idea, Mr. Smith?
I do not.
185 times. Someone that the whole country knows wasn't telling the truth, and you were still considering putting her on the witness stand because you had to get President Trump, and everybody can see that. We better take a recess for votes. We will resume as soon as votes are over. Back here 10 minutes after. Ms. Smith, you guys can go back to the room that you were in.
All right, so we're going to jump in here because they are in recess right now. But we're keeping our eye on what's going on with Mr. Jack Smith as he is testifying in front of the House Judiciary Committee. And I love the fact that we're calling out Hutchinson because she was a liar, an absolute liar. And it's really infuriating to sit back and to watch as it all unraveled. They were trying to legitimize her at any point because they didn't really have two people out there willing to do what she did for them. And again, nobody even heard of the story that she told them. Nobody heard of it. Nobody heard of it. Secret Service had no idea what she was talking about. But it made for quite the drama for those on the left. And they ran with it. They ran with it. Didn't need to fact check it. Didn't need to cross-reference anything. They had their golden gem of a lie and continued to push it. So again, we're going to wait until they come back. We will keep you informed as it develops, of course, on the Hill. We're also keeping our eye on the healthcare CEOs who are expected to testify in front of the Ways and Means Committee. That will happen at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Eastern Time. Folks, there's a lot going on all around the world, and I want to make sure we keep you up to date. As we detailed previously, too, President Trump has officially taken us out of the World Health Organization. So that happened earlier today. Let's take you to Virginia, though, because Virginia is passing some really, or they're trying to pass some really poor legislation. As many of you guys know, there's been a transfer, obviously. It was being ran, the state itself, was being ran by a Democrat, a Republican, and now it's being ran by a Democrat. So you're seeing all of these massive changes and all of these liberal pieces of legislation make their way forward. And, you know, I'm constantly trying to follow it. But apparently, according to Mr. Tom Renz, is a new bill that's been put up, and this one's interesting. Virginia is attempting to pass legislation that would require public school teachers to teach that J6 was a violent insurrection. And the 2020 election was not stolen. You got to brainwash those kids themselves when you got them in front of you. You can't have them go out there and to listen to independent outlets to feel a sense of unbalance. I mean, a sense of like nonpartisan, I guess I'd say. You know, other people are going out there and combating it. You got to brainwash these kids while you still have them in public schools. Virginia is an absolute, is a disgrace right now. And the legislation that's popping up everywhere is deeply, deeply concerning. There was even another bill that Greg Price posted online. And I actually think it actually could possibly be related. Nope, these are two separate bills that are being put forward. Greg Price talking about a Virginia Democrats have introduced a bill that would mandate children to be taught inclusive history. That obviously would include those marginalized communities, you know, the people like the trannies and the queer people. You know, no one's ever actually been able to tell me what the definition of queer means. Just kind of a name we throw out there for gross lesbians. All right, let's switch it up too. Let's talk a little bit more in regards to Hold on, I'm pulling it up. All right, let's talk about what's going on in regards to the fraud that's being exposed throughout Minnesota. As many of you guys know, Tim Walz really hasn't done much. In fact, when you look at what Tim Walz has done and who he's appointed to key positions, even the positions that are meant to investigate the fraud, you find out that he hasn't really done much. In fact, he's probably really teetering down a criminal liability angle in all of this. Take a listen to clip 24.
You view your role as supporting agencies to do their job, but not holding them accountable. Am I understanding that?
Madam Chair, we do not have a tool to hold agencies accountable.
So what would that tool be? What do you need? Because under statute, that is your responsibility for internal controls. So if you don't have the tools and it's yet your statutory responsibility, like, what do you need?
I want to be clear that when you look at the state statute, subdivision 8 of 16A.057 specifically states that the head of each executive agency is responsible for designing, implementing, and maintaining an effective internal control system within the agency that complies with the requirements of the subdivisions. I mean, I know you're asking the question of what do we need to hold agencies accountable? I would view that differently, and that would be to say, what do we need for agencies to be successful?
Okay, I would just like to point out that in Statute 16A.057, it says the commissioner, meaning of MMB, is responsible for the system of internal controls across the executive branch. Sub 1, safeguard public funds and assess and assets and minimize incidents of fraud, waste, and abuse. That is the responsibility of the commissioner of MMB.
And Chair Robbins, the way that we do that is by creating a framework for agencies to use and providing support and resources and tools for them to use in order to identify and implement their own internal controls.
And when they fail at that, what do you do?
Go ahead.
Chair Robbins, what we do is step
nothing.
In with support.
We do nothing. We give them support. We give them more funding. More funding. We do nothing. No, we don't need any help trying to uncover fraud. Come on, lady. We're just cutting checks to foreign countries. Money meant to help the lives of Americans. Nah. These people are all criminals. They're all criminals. And the frustrating part is, you know, we've allowed it to happen. I mean, what more needs to be done? Probably got to start dragging people off to prison. I mean, this is becoming so enraging. Oh, by the way, the DOJ did announce that there was a second arrest of another individual who was apparently present during that protest outside of that church in Minnesota. They've arrested two now. But, like, this is the bare minimum. Again, they're going for the lowest hanging fruit. You're going after activists. And again, yes, they should be arrested. But we're asking for more. We're asking for things of substance. We're asking for people to be held accountable because you get the strongly worded statements that continuously drop, but you don't get the actual action to follow it. You're telling me that people should fear the DOJ if they are criminals, if they're doing illegal activity, if they're participating in corruption, but you're not actually showing us what the consequences of it are. Cool, you got two people. Awesome. Great. And again, these are, I just saw, and it's really unfortunate, Harmy Dillon used the term black pillars. Black pillars. I'm so tired of the term being used for people who are just looking for accountability. And you at home are allowed to ask for accountability. You are, because guess what? You are a voter and you're a taxpayer. It's so crazy that they want to, it's like the new conspiracy theorists, right? When they go around, they try to slap down anyone saying things that are not narrative friendly. Conspiracy theorists. The black pillar is the same exact thing. It's meant to have that same type of mental effect on folks. It's a psyop, everything is these days. I'm just so done with it. The American people deserve more. They deserve more. And if you want to go after them for trying to hold public and voicing why they are actually disappointed in this current administration, You want to call him a name? Okay, whatever. We've been called names before. All you're doing is being more divisive when you throw a name at someone who's just saying, hey, listen, I want you to do what needs to be done to save this country. Big arrests, not the little ones, you know, although they're nice. Kudos to you. These aren't the arrests that we continuously ask for. And they know this. They know this. And again, once a Democrat gets in there, I mean, it's going to be significantly worse. I don't know how else to describe it. You haven't done anything to show that there are consequences when you try to destroy this country and you try to tear it down. They haven't done anything. They haven't done anything. And so you want me to get all happy about this? No, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. I have no excitement right now with what's going on right now at the DOJ. None. None. And we were all pumped up at the very beginning of all of this because we figured that, yes, people who have tried to destroy this country were going to be held accountable. But you damn blackpillers are the reason why this is not going well for us. You're the reason why Republicans are going to lose for the midterms. Blackpillers, people online who are just voicing criticism, which is allowed through free speech, of course. It's really quite disturbing. You know, because I say, okay, great, two arrests. That was nice. That was nice. But they weren't alone, right? There were other people there who were also participating in their so-called protests. Or if you're Don Lemon, it was an operation. And again, this is just low-hanging fruit, right? That's the easy win. That's the easy win. The rest of them, the more controversial ones, the ones that are going to tick off all the right people in the deep state, just keep waiting. Just keep waiting. Justice will come eventually. DHS has launched a brand new public online database, which is expected to expose the illegal aliens who are being rounded up by the agency. Now, again, President Trump has voiced his concerns about, you know, how we're not detailing who these people are that we're deporting, the violent criminals. DHS does a good job with that, but I guess this is their way of trying to fulfill the president's request. And so they've now created this website that will go out there and show you who they've gotten. It's filtered by crime, country of origin, and the state where the arrest was taking place. Again, they're not hiding any of this. It's pretty much in front of your face, just whether or not you choose to want to follow the facts. Again, I see the emails. I got another one today. They're putting out emails that go after the worst of the worst and detailing who they're capturing. Whether or not the media tells you about that is up to the media. Obviously, it doesn't fit the narrative, and they can't tell you about all the pedophiles that are being swept up in all of this. They also didn't tell you that the Biden administration, when they were operating the human smuggling trafficking ring, whatever you want to call it, back when we had open borders, that those scumbags allowed convicted pedophiles into our country, known rapists. And I know this because I obtained the documents through suing TSA that they in fact knew that these people were rapists. They knew that they were sort of pedophiles and they still let them into our country anyway. They just had to sign a little document that says, oh, I'll take an online course to help me no longer to be a pedophile. Because we all know that's how things work. Thanks for getting that up, guys. All right, guys, we got more to discuss in just a little bit. Don't go anywhere. Buckle up. In the meantime, though, head on over to thealexjonesstore.com. When you support us, we support you by giving you free gear. We're doing just that over at thealexjonesstore.com right now. No minimum required. And you get this $40 t-shirt for free. Again, this is going on for just a couple more days. This will end on Sunday. So head on over to the shop and make sure you snag this incredible deal.
I'm jacked up on the meth lane. Blue is the best thing you guys have ever had.
It clears the brain fog where you're actually able to focus more clearly.
For me, it's like a fog lifted, but it was like a veil lifted off, you know? Incredible. Best product that I've purchased so far.
I started having seizures like a few years ago, and everybody in my family knows I'm a neuroscientist.
What did you do to fix it?
Methylene blue.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson was on here talking about it.
This stuff works, man.
I take it every day as well.
And yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic.
What is Bobby Kennedy Jr. dropping into that glass of water?
Plenty of folks are wondering what was in that little bottle he uncorked during a flight.
Methylene blue.
Show her Kennedy taking it. Kennedy literally gobbles it.
He must be doing something right. That ripped bod is 73 years old.
You shouldn't have to tell a doctor about methylene blue. I think everybody should know about it. It's changed my life.
I knew what that did for me. I knew that it got me up and walking again, and I was having seizures without it, and I was bad, really bad. So I ordered it. I started taking it. And boy, let me tell you something. What a blessing.
I do subscribe to the Methylene Blue. Feel better. I feel like I'm 25.
Like I said, I've been taking the Methylene Blue, and it is freaking awesome. I actually subscribe monthly now to it. And I got a couple other people that I work with. I gave them it, and they did the same thing.
About 15 minutes ago, I took 10 drops of the Ultimate Methylene Blue. Definitely noticed my focus, cognition increased, good energy right now.
I must say that it does a damn good job.
Let me tell you something. I'm walking without a cane. I take one pill a day of the ivermectin with the Methylene Blue. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I am so blessed.
Powered by Methylene Blue. Ultra Methylene Blue. Look at theolivestorestore.com.
Excited you're all jumping on board with us today. We are looking at what's going on in Davos, and it looks like Elon Musk is speaking right now. Let's take a listen.
The overall goal of my companies is to maximize the future of civilization, like basically maximize the probability that civilization has a great future, to expand consciousness beyond Earth. So if you take SpaceX, for example, that SpaceX is about advancing rocket technology to the point where we can extend life and consciousness beyond Earth, to the Moon, to Mars, eventually to other star systems. And I think we should always view consciousness, life as we know it, as precarious and delicate, because to the best of our knowledge, we don't know of life anywhere else. You know, I'm often asked, are there aliens among us? And I'll say that I am one, but...
Or you're from the future.
They don't believe me.
Okay.
I think if anyone would know if there are aliens among us, it would be me. We have 9,000 satellites up there, and not once have we had to maneuver around an alien spaceship. So I'm like, I don't know. Bottom line is, I think we need to assume that life and consciousness is extremely rare, and it might only be us. And if that's the case, then we need to do everything possible to ensure that the light of consciousness is not extinguished, because we're effectively the way I view it is, the image in my mind is of a tiny candle in a vast darkness, a tiny candle of consciousness that could easily go out. And that's why it's important to make life multiplanetary, such that if there is a natural disaster or a man-made disaster on Earth, that consciousness continues. That's the purpose of SpaceX. Tesla is obviously about sustainable technology, and also at this point we've sort of added to our mission sustainable abundance. So with robotics and AI, this is really the path to abundance for all. If you say, you know, people often talk about solving global poverty, or essentially how do we give everyone a very high standard of living? I think the only way to do this is AI and robotics. Which doesn't mean that it is without its issues. I mean, we need to be very careful with AI. We need to be very careful with robotics. We don't want to find ourselves in a James Cameron movie, Terminator. he's great movies. Love his movies, but we don't want to be in Terminator, obviously. If you have ubiquitous AI that is essentially free or close to it, and ubiquitous robotics, then you will have an explosion in the global economy, an expansion in the global economy that is truly beyond all precedent.
Elon, can that expansion be broad?
Yes.
Or is it narrow? And how can that be created? How can it broaden the global economy?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, a way to think of it is that if you have a large number of humanoid robots, the economic output is the average productivity per robot times the number of robots.
Right.
And actually, my prediction is in the benign scenario of the future that we will. The robots will actually make so many robots in AI that they will actually saturate all human needs. Meaning you won't be able to even think of something to ask the robot for at a certain point.
Eye on the WEF. We're also keeping our eye on that congressional hearing that's happening right now with Jack Smith. Again, when it starts to get good, we'll jump back into that hearing as well. But buckle up. The third hour of the program is going to get very, very interesting as we dive into Davos as well. We've got three people on the ground there to give us the very latest, so don't go anywhere.
Bovine Colostrum Plus, a really incredible new product that's flying off the shelves. What if one simple scoop a day could strengthen your body's natural defenses at every single stage of life? This is Bovine Colostrum Plus, nature's very first superfood, now in its purest, most potent form. For teens and kids, Colostrum Plus delivers 4,000 milligrams of immune-boosting IgG antibodies and 20 grams of premium protein to power growth, crush colds before they start, and keep young athletes recovering faster and staying in the game. In your 20s and 30s, it rebuilds your gut barrier, sharpens focus, and helps you bounce back from tough workouts and late nights like you're still 21. Hitting 40, 50, and beyond? Well, Bovine Colostrum Plus fights back against age-related immune decline, supports healthy inflammation levels, and keeps your joints, skin, and energy feeling years younger. One scoop, 500 milligrams of soothing marshmallow root for your gut, 500 milligrams of lactoferrin, nature's ultimate defender, and zero junk. Get it today at thealexjonesstore.com.
You're tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back to the American Journal. We're excited you're all jumping on board with us today. A lot happening all across the country. We're waiting for that congressional hearing to begin around 2:30 p.m. Eastern time. It's going to take place with a lot of top healthcare CEOs, so you could expect it to get a little heated, of course, because members of Congress, they're going to want to grill them. And we look forward to bringing you that when it begins, or if there's anything interesting that occurs there, we'll, of course, bring it to you. Also, CVS will be front and center as well. As many of you guys know, they are one of the biggest pharmacies in the country. And I'm sure they've got a lot to talk about when it comes to pharmaceuticals. But folks, President Trump has made it his priority to roll back Obamacare. As many of you guys know, he made that attempt in the first term to do just that. And now he's back trying to do it again. And the reality of it is our taxpayer money is going directly towards these health insurance companies. And unfortunately, it's not really working out for the American people. We were promised affordability, and it doesn't seem to be that way. These health insurance companies are getting significantly richer, and unfortunately, it's not getting any easier to gain access to affordable health coverage. And remember that term, you know, you got to keep your doctor. Well, that wasn't true, of course. But President Trump is speaking out about all of it, and he wants to give that money, instead of to all these health insurance companies, he wants to give that money straight to you. In clip 14, he details just that. Take a listen.
Do you support the Paramount deal, sir?
On healthcare, Mr. President, 22 million Americans are expected to see their healthcare insurance premiums start to rise by the beginning of next year.
You're talking about because Obamacare is so bad?
Yes, well, sir, because the Obamacare subsidies are expiring.
Obamacare is so bad.
What is the Republican plan? Are you going to let that happen on your watch?
What I'm going to do is, if the Democrats go along with it, which they don't want to because they want to make the insurance companies very rich, okay? I want the money to be paid to the people to go out and buy their own health care instead of paying to the, you know, the insurance companies, their stock has gone up 1,700% in a short period of time. Did you know that? 1,700. You wish your corn went up. But the insurance companies, stock has gone up by 1,700%, 1,800%. They're taking in trillions of dollars. I don't want to pay the insurance companies anything. And I know a lot of them, but they're owned by the Democrats. And the Democrats have, Obamacare is a setup to make insurance companies rich. And I want to pay the people, and I want the people to go out and buy their own health care. And that's what we want to do, and that's what the Republicans want to do.
All right, this is a very complex issue, so trying to, you know, simplify this to help the average American and myself understand what's going on here. Joining me to discuss is Allie Pipe. She is the president and CEO of Thomas W. Smith Fellow in Healthcare Policy at the Pacific Research Institute. And, you know, she's been fighting this battle for quite some time now, so it's an honor to have Sally on the program today. Thank you for being here. You know, when we were listening to President Trump walk us through his plans specifically to take that money, our money, and instead of giving it directly to the health insurance companies, to give it to the American people so that it creates more of a free market, I think a lot of Americans think that that would probably be a better option here. What do you make of the president's plans thus far?
I think it's absolutely excellent. I've been talking for many years. We need to empower patients and doctors and not government systems. So this is a great idea. It's part of his great healthcare plan. And I think it's very exciting. And I think people are saying, well, if the government pays the subsidies to individuals, how will that work? Well, the way to do that would be to set up health savings accounts so that money would go from the government into an individual or family's health savings account, and it would get rid of so much of this fraud and abuse that Mr. Trump is talking about that we all know about. We know that of the 24 million people who signed up for Obamacare plans in 2024, that 12 million of them never filed a single claim. And of that, 40% were fully subsidized. So there's a lot of fraud and abuse. About $40 billion was paid out in subsidies out of $138 billion, $40 billion to people who never used a plan. And it looks like the insurance companies have signed up people without them knowing that they were signed up. So they didn't know they had coverage, therefore they didn't use their coverage. So this is something we really need to get hold of because it's very expensive, fraud and abuse. So we need to empower patients, as Mr. Trump has said. And he's also said we need to – if the enhanced subsidies are extended for another 3 years as passed by the House, he is going to veto that. And I think that's an excellent idea. The subsidies are not ending. It's the extended subsidies that came into being, when COVID was in place.
Okay. So that's a key element to all of this, is the extended subsidies. And I think that's important to drive home that point as well. But you were alluding to the fact that these health insurance companies, and I just want you to kind of break this down for us, because this is really shocking. These health insurance companies were possibly signing up Americans for health care plans that they were unaware of. How does that even happen?
Well, because insurance agents and brokers, they want to sign people up. They want to get more people signed up because they get larger commissions. But isn't it interesting that we know that probably about six million of those people didn't use their plans at all. Mm-hmm. 12 million didn't use any coverage. So the looks like the insurance companies were signing people up without them knowing about it, and therefore they never used their plan. So what we need to do is to get the agents to have to confirm with each patient on the phone to make sure that they're actually alive and know that they're going to have coverage. So, you know, this whole issue of re-enrollment without knowing is a bad thing, and it's very expensive. And, you know, people that have a problem, if they don't know they have insurance, may not go to the doctor or the hospital. So this is a huge fraudulent issue, and we need to take care of it. And I know, Mr. Trump, that's one of the reasons why he is pushing empowering patients, giving the money to the patients, not the insurance company, so they can sign up people without them knowing they have coverage.
Yeah, and Sally, I think that's so crazy, and it's common sense. We need to cut back on the fraud because, like you were just alluding to as well, there's a massive amount of fraud out there right now. And, you know, Just the News just did a story on this as well, highlighting all of this. But, you know, we're waiting. It's a couple of hours away. But the United Healthcare CEO, Cigna CEO, and as well as the CVS Healthcare or Health Group, they're all going to be front and center right now and testifying today. What do you expect to come from that hearing?
Yeah, so there are two House hearings. One with Energy and Commerce is the first one. Mm-hmm. And the second one is Ways and Means. There will be five CEOs. Steve Helmsley from the CEO of United has said, well, I think we're going to pay back all the profits we make from the ACA plans in the form of rebates. Well, United Health has a big problem right now with Medicare Advantage and what we call uploading, getting doctors to sign up people with more severe conditions. So the United made a lot more money. So I think, you know, we'll see what happens, but you know, as I mentioned, the fraud, the abuse, the extended subsidies. And the other issue is pharmaceutical benefit managers. These are middlemen who work with insurance companies to get better prices from the pharmaceutical companies. They are keeping those rebates and not returning the rebates in terms of lower prices at the drugstore. So we need to reform PBMs. We need to get rid of fraud and abuse and this whole entitlement issue. So it'll be very interesting. CVS Caremark is one of the three largest PBMs in the country, along with Express Scripts and Optum, the United Healthcare. So it's going to be interesting, but affordability can come about if we get rid of the issues that I just talked about. And also under the Affordable Care Act, the essential health benefits, 10 mandates on insurance companies that they have to provide. I may want an insurance plan that covers alcohol rehabilitation. You might want one that covers IVF. But, you know, you should be able to get the plan that you want and one that covers the things that you want. And so with these 10 essential health benefits, it adds tremendously to the plans. So short-term limited duration plans for people between jobs, young people, so that they can get a plan that's affordable. Association health plans. These are things that Biden made very difficult or almost eliminated. So we need to bring those back. Trump had them in the first term, and those are ways to make insurance affordable and available to the kind with the kinds of plans that people want that will give them coverage when they actually need it.
Okay, Sally, I want to go to clip 15 here right now, because the press secretary earlier this week was kind of walking Americans through what the president's goals are in regards to kind of reforming our healthcare system right now. Let's take a listen.
President Trump unveiled a healthcare plan for America called the Great Healthcare Plan, and a video message detailing his solutions to lower costs for all Americans and significantly improve our healthcare system. The Great Healthcare Plan will accomplish this through four common sense pillars. Number one, permanently lowering prescription drug prices. Congress can get this done by codifying President Trump's historic Most Favored Nation initiatives into law to guarantee Americans the same low prices for prescription drugs that people in other countries around the world pay. Additionally, by increasing consumer choice by making more verified, safe pharmaceutical drugs available for over-the-counter purchases. Number two, the Great Healthcare Plan will stop sending big insurance companies billions in extra taxpayer-funded subsidy payments and instead send that money directly to eligible Americans to allow them to buy the health insurance of their choice. Additionally, by funding a cost-sharing reduction program for healthcare plans and ending kickbacks from pharmacy benefit managers to large brokerage middlemen. Number three, the Great Healthcare Plan will maximize price transparency by requiring any healthcare provider or insurer who accepts either Medicare or Medicaid to publicly and prominently post their pricing and fees to avoid surprise medical bills. This is an incredibly popular policy that has been bipartisan for many years, and President Trump is officially and firmly calling on Congress to get it done. And number four, hold big insurance companies accountable by requiring them to publish rate and coverage comparisons up front on their websites in plain English so consumers and everyday Americans can make the best purchasing decisions for them and their families. These are common sense actions that make up President Trump's Great Healthcare Plan, and they represent the most comprehensive and bold agenda to lower healthcare costs to have ever been considered by the federal government.
All right, Sally, I want you to react to that, because, I mean, it's a well-thought-out plan, and it sounds like he's simplifying the healthcare system that we have today, which is very complex. What do you make of the plan that she just laid out there?
Well, as we talked about, most of the things that she mentioned, we've already talked about. The one thing that we hadn't talked about was most favored nation status. Pricing models, where he talks about we can lower drug prices by tying our drug prices in the U.S. to those in countries within the OECD. Now, what that means is that it's bringing price controls into our pharmaceutical and biopharm sectors. These price controls will reduce innovation in this country. We know from Thomas Phillipson at University of Chicago that 55 research projects have already been eliminated because of IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, the price controls on the first 10 drugs under Medicare Part D that just came into effect. And we also know that he has projected that 139 new drugs will not come to market by 2039 because of these price controls. Most favored nation status is tying the prices, as I said, to drugs in these OECD countries. The problem is all of those OECD countries have price controls on their pharmaceuticals. We in America are the world's medicine chest. The R&D, all of these companies, whether it's Sanofi, Novartis, all of these companies from Europe do their R&D in this country because we don't have price controls. So if we bring those in from what President Trump is talking about, it's going to destroy the world's medicine chest in America. We know that between 2012 and 2021, of all the new drugs that were launched, 85% were available to people here in America, whereas in France, only 52%, 59% in the UK, 44% in Canada, where I'm from, where it's very difficult to get the latest drugs. So we want to keep the market for research and development open and not bring in price controls that's going to destroy, will throw out the goose with and be very, very difficult for us because we are cutting edge with cancer drugs, drugs for dementia, Alzheimer's. We want to be the world's medicine chest, and price controls is the last thing we want. Price controls have never worked in any industry, and they won't work here. So I hope he's going to see the light on that and stop trying to get the drug companies to tie in, which they have been. 16 out of 17 drug companies said they will expand manufacturing facilities for 3 years, and in return, they will not be subject to tariffs. But this is, we've got to keep this market open. It's one of the brightest areas in this country.
Yeah, capitalism has advanced our medicine significantly here in the United States. And, you know, Americans are understanding of that, but also don't like some greed that could possibly be involved in all of this. So I think the simplified version and it's kind of the breakdown of what's going on behind the scenes is very, very important for Americans. And so we look forward to seeing that as it develops. Sally, I wanted to ask you before you go, though, in regards, because this is very concerning for our audience. I know a lot of people who live in these 10 states that I'll list, I know that it's very hard to find a competitive commercial health industry, health insurance industry, like Alabama, Kentucky, Hawaii, Michigan, Louisiana, Illinois, Alaska, Vermont, Delaware, and West Virginia. Those are just some of the least competitive markets right now. What are those residents currently faced, and how has the antitrust measures not done enough to kind of help make that more of a competitive field for those individuals living in those states?
Well, we support competition in all states. The problem is that, you know, a lot of these states like West Virginia, Alabama, you know, it's harder to find, you know, there are not high-end hospitals that are available. They're rural hospitals. So we need to open up the market, get rid of a certificate of need law so new hospitals can develop and be built and not be stopped by a state government. So we need to, you know, really, as I say, open up the market, make it accessible for everyone. And another thing is telehealth. For people in these states, telemedicine is a great way to reach doctors in the finest doctors and specialists in great hospitals. So I'm hoping that telemedicine is going to pass and be extended. So it's because it will be very good for patients in the short term and the long term, because they will get access to the best and the brightest in every field of medicine.
Yeah. Well, Sally, I love telehealth services. I'm a big fan. I use it myself quite often. So I'm all on board
for that.
It really is a great service. Yeah. It's changed a lot. I mean, I remember back in the day you had to actually, and when I was in college and we didn't have a car, you had to find a way to get to the doctor. I mean, now they've brought this forward and they've made it so easy. And so expanding it would be great for the rest of the folks in this country. And so I'm all on board with that. Sally, thank you for breaking this all down for us. It's a very complex issue, and trying to simplify it and get through the fraud is very important. So thank you.
Well, thank you, and have a good day.
Yes. Thank you, Sally. We appreciate all your incredible work. Trying to understand a little bit more about the health insurance chaos that goes on throughout this country. Obviously, it's a very complex issue, very complex issue. And Sally's been fighting for Americans when it comes to Obamacare and others. She saw the disaster before it became an actual disaster and was trying to sound the alarms on that. So we look forward to keeping our eye on the hearings. Apparently, there's two of them now. I believe there was one, but there's two health insurance hearings going on today with the CEOs front and center, and they're going to probably get grilled, and it's going to get kind of nasty. I mean, one would assume members of Congress are going to get a little aggressive on that front, so we're going to keep our eye to that. We also got our eye right now on Jack Jack Smith, who's testifying in front of the Judiciary Committee. Now, as many of you guys know, we've been playing little bits and pieces. Right now, they're in recess, but it's going to resume very, very soon. So once that happens, we will try to bring you back there. But we're also going to be bringing you to Davos. Little did you know, you're going to tune into an InfoWars show, and you're going to be heading to Davos. I know many of you probably didn't want to go there, but you're going to go there. No, we've got some great resources on the ground right now doing incredible work. Larry Taunton, who was on with us earlier this week, as many of you guys know, phoned into the show to give us an update as to what was happening. Gave me a little lecture about what the in crowd does in Davos, what they say. And, you know, they got their little like nicknames. And so he broke that down for us. But today's the last day of what they're covering, what they're going through. So they're going to join me. It's going to be Larry Taunton as well as Jenica Pounds. Now, as many of you guys know, Jenica Pounds on X is actually Data Republican. And she's got a massive audience. Why? Well, because she exposes a lot of the corruption. And so Jenica will be on with us as well as her interpreter because she's a member of the deaf community. And she does incredible work. Her interpreter will also be on board with us today to help us understand where Jenica is in all of this. But I've got a lot of key questions about what's going on at the WEF. I was told a lot of AI talk, and we heard Elon Musk saying it, right? He's pushing, obviously, for the innovations regarding AI, but also was very cautious as to what AI can become. And I was actually very happy to hear him say that, in case you missed it. We played about a couple of minutes worth in the beginning of the hour, and you guys could check that out if you missed that over at Bandoff Video. But it was about 20 minutes ago, just to kind of get you queued up properly there. But he detailed specifically about how AI and making sure that the United States is at the top of the AI race, but also how they could be very concerned and how they have to do this safely. And so that was refreshing to hear him address that issue. It was also interesting to hear him say that SpaceX, their goal is, in case ever the lights go out here in the world, if they could have life on Mars. When I was going around SpaceX, and I honestly just thought it was like a thing on social media. I didn't know that this was like really happening at SpaceX. First off, the SpaceX employees love working for SpaceX. I learned that when we were talking to folks. I also learned that they are actually planning to colonize Mars. I don't know why I thought that was a myth. I don't know why I thought that was just something that you were seeing on social media, but they said it. So it's real. It's real. And Elon Musk even saying if the lights go out here, he's got his plan worked out. So, you know, I'll bow out. Whatever God's plans are is God's plans. I'm going to stay here in the United States. All right, folks, I wanted to bring this story to your attention. I don't think we really gave it enough coverage yesterday, but Just the News put out a really, really concerning report, and it has to go a lot with, again, as we just discussed with Sally, you know, our federal government has been just allowing people to spend whatever they want to spend, take any money what they want to take. And the FBI has just been writing and cutting blank checks, six-figure checks, apparently, to whatever group aligns with them. And at the time under the Biden regime, that really included a group that was going out and using, apparently, according to Just the News, was using foreign analyst group programs to run facial recognition of those who had entered the Capitol on January 6th, or those who were wanted outside of the Capitol as well. As many of you guys know, Sedition Hunters was the nickname that they were given online. But according to Just the News, who broke this story, and I don't think it's getting enough attention, they coughed up, and by they, I mean the FBI, so it's your money. They paid up about $150,000 in payments to these informants. Again, this was an anonymous group. Maybe they never knew the names. Maybe they did. Who knows? But they were giving them just blank checks. Here's $150,000. You know, there are some incredible reporters out there, independent journalists, who could probably use $150,000 for the great work that they do. You know, like BX, Becca on X, who goes after pedophile groups and exposes them. She could probably get a check. She probably should get a check, actually. I mean, there's nobody working aggressively hard to expose terrorist attacks that are being plotted all across the world than this woman is, to save children than this woman is. So maybe just give her a check. FBI. Why not? All right, folks, buckle up. We're getting ready to kick off the third hour, second part of the show. This is the girl. She's a 2A advocate too, Becca. I like this video of her. She's a little badass. This girl doesn't fear anyone. We all need to get like Becca. All right, but we're getting ready to kick off the next portion of the hour. It's going to be a good one. I've been wanting Data Republican on for quite some time, so no one's more excited about this interview than I am right now. Look forward to having her and Larry on as well. We'll talk about that in a moment. Meantime, though, head on over to thealexjonesstore.com. Why? Well, right now we're giving away a free T-shirt with every purchase. No minimum required over at thealexjonesstore.com. And some of your favorite items are on sale right now. Discounts vary, so you got to head on over right now to thealexjonesstore.com and check out the savings.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nitric Boost, the all-time fan favorite, is now back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com.
You've looked at our formula. You like it?
I did, and I do. Yes. Well, nitric oxide is a key. It's made by our own bodies again. It's made by L-citrulline and L-arginine, the amino acids.
And now a major shipment has finally come back in for those of you that want to be able to stock up on it at InfoWarsStore.com. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Judy Mikovits, without me even knowing she'd gotten it and used it, came on years ago and said this was the best spike protein detoxer she found.
Just like you want your own body to make vitamin D from the sunlight, you can't force it back in people who can't make it. It can actually hurt them. It's called peroxynitrites. So you want to boost your own body's ability. The nitric oxide relaxes the endothelium, the vasculature. It relaxes the vein. So I use the two, your InfoWars. I keep that on my shelf, and I feed myself the Cardio Miracle, which is just for straight food. It's a different formulation than that one. And the two together are a 1-2 punch. So you get in your food the ability to make what you need and no more.
Because of the organic based compounds that are in it that cause vasodilation in the blood vessels, in the arteries, in the veins, in the capillaries. And it just does so many other great things.
So constricted blood vessels too, because athletes are running, they're constricted, they're working so that the blood flows and it doesn't flow, which is why your nitric oxide product, that new products, I hope you'll show it, because that's a very important thing to have for acute events. Dissolve under the tongue, give you an instant relaxing of your endothelium, your vasculature.
Now listen, it is already a nationwide best-selling bodybuilding product for over 20 years. Bodybuilders take it as it helps grow muscles and better workouts and things. I was just researching and wanting to put something out that was good for the heart and talked to a lot of scientists and researchers I knew, and they said, well, these are the type of ingredients we were thinking about putting out a product. When I talked to formulators, they said, well, we actually already have a product that has that, so we private labeled it as Nitric Boost. And just for men in the morning when you wake up, that's the big thing people feel and see right away. So imagine what else is doing for your body. So for those of you that love Nitric Boost, it's back in stock right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And for those that haven't tried Nitric Boost, you are really missing out. Secure your Nitric Boost right now at InfoWarsStore.com. We're battling in the courts. We're still here a year after the Onion said they bought us. We might actually hold on and win. But regardless, the shopping cart's there, the shipments are going out, and you will get your product. But if you don't order it, support us, we'll be off the air. So it's a paradox. So please take action now at InfoWarsStore.com and experience Nitric Boost for yourself. And listen, men feel it in that one way. Women love it as well. It's good for men and women. Get your Nitric Boost now, right now, exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. And thanks for being the reason, one way or another, we'll always be on the air. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost, back in stock.
Welcome to the Great Reset. Eat the bugs. You will own nothing and you will be happy. Take the vaccine. Trust the science. Get your booster.
Every crisis is an opportunity, and the world will be reshaped in our vision.
Down with the globalists. Get Ultra Methylene Red at thealexjonesstore.com.
You're tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello.
All right, welcome back to the American Journal. We're excited you're all jumping on board with us today. A lot happening all around the world. We've been keeping our eye on Davos because you never know what those globalist pigs are going to do and what they're going to say. But, you know, we're watching. We're watching. You know, it was a good week for many who were in the area, but we've got quite the impressive panel. These three individuals have been on the ground in Davos and probably making everyone who's a globalist pig feel very uncomfortable. So let's just jump right into it. We have Larry Taunton on the show again this week. Larry, it's an honor to have you on. You are the host of Ideas Have Consequences. We're also joined by Jenica Pounds, a.k.a. Data Republican, who's uncovered so much fraud over the years. And it's an honor to have her on the program. And we're also joined by her interpreter, Data Republican's interpreter, is how you could find her on X. It's an honor to have all three of you here. I'm excited for this segment. You know, let's start off with Data Republican, because, Jenica, I'm very excited that you're here. I just saw Elon Musk at the top of the hour. He was speaking over at the World Economic Forum, and Elon Musk said something that was very, very important. He was talking about the AI race, but specifically, he said, we've got to, you know, be cautious here because this could get really dangerous. What are you seeing on the ground in Davos in regards to the AI race? Is there anything that has you concerned?
Well, this year, everyone is obsessed with AI, right? I just see AI marketed everywhere. And I was just wondering, why all week have I been seeing this? And I finally think I have a little bit of an understanding. I think the WEFers are both excited, right, about the money that they can collect from AI because it's huge. But the second reason is I think they're very scared as well. My gut feeling from talking to many people is that it could be dangerous. AI could be dangerous. That's why they're scared of him. And I think the reason why they're afraid is that they will have no more control with the AI, and they won't be able to control the narrative.
Yeah, yeah, and that's likely the big concern here. Larry, I want to bring you in on this because you've been on the ground, and I'm pretty sure when people saw the both of you, all three of you on the ground, they got a little nervous because they know you guys are going to expose the truth. Today is the final day, so what have you seen so far?
Yeah, it's been very interesting, Brianna. The WEFers, you know, have deposed Klaus Schwab. So his 55-year reign has come to an end. And I was really curious because I've been coming, you know, for several years now. And Jenica was interested in joining me this year. And I wondered, you know, what we would see. Would it be taking on a completely different tone now that Schwab was out of the way? There's new leadership in charge. What would be different? And it's business as usual.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it looks like that. You know, I want to get to this soundbite, Larry, and then get your reaction to it. Because in clip 18, President Trump, he had a message for European leaders. And this is really, really important, saying that Europe isn't recognizable anymore. Take a listen.
This afternoon, I want to discuss how we have achieved this economic miracle, how we intend to raise living standards for our citizens to levels never seen before. And perhaps how you too and the places where you come from can do much better by following what we're doing, because certain places in Europe are not even recognizable, frankly, anymore. They're not recognizable. And we can argue about it, but there's no argument. Friends come back from different places. I don't want to insult anybody and say I don't recognize it. And that's not in a positive way. That's in a very negative way. And I love Europe, and I want to see Europe go good, but it's not heading in the right direction. In recent decades, it became conventional wisdom in Washington and European capitals that the only way to grow a modern Western economy was through ever-increasing government spending, unchecked mass migration, and endless foreign imports. The consensus was that so-called dirty jobs and heavy industry should be sent elsewhere, that affordable energy should be replaced by the Green New Scam, and that countries could be propped up by importing new and entirely different populations from faraway lands. This was the path that Sleepy Joe Biden administration and many other Western governments very foolishly followed.
All right. Obviously, this has a lot to do with the great replacement theory, as many people have, you know, we were told it was a conspiracy. But the reality of it is we've seen Europe change drastically. And I think a lot of people are concerned. Larry, what were your thoughts when you heard President Trump mention this?
Well, it's 100% accurate, and it may insult European leaders. They need to hear it because it's true. Listen, I've been coming to Europe very regularly, multiple times a year for decades now. I was partially educated in Europe, lived in Europe. From here, I will go to Krakow. I will be in Paris. I'll be in London. I'll be in Rome. Point is, I'm all over Europe, for a very long time. And aspects of Europe are becoming unrecognizable. London has utterly changed from my student days. And I mean, in a very negative way. People are referring to it as Londonistan. And there's a reason why they would do that. Parts of Paris where we have no-go zones. And we're seeing these things all over Europe. And the two things that Trump was pointing to are, one, are mass migration, mass immigration, the importation of people of an alien culture. And the second is failed economic policies, which are cratering these beautiful cities in Europe.
Yeah, and this has always been a concern for most of us at this point, because we saw what was happening in Europe and we figured that the globalists were going to make this the future for the United States. And, you know, the last 4 years under the Biden administration, this was what was going on here. So I'm proud of the president for speaking up on that front. Jenica, I wanted to get your take on this. You know, Gavin Newsom's not a fan of censorship, which is quite shocking. But in clip 19, he thinks that the current administration was somehow censoring him, and he kind of alludes to that. Let's take a listen.
And what's happening across my country and what happened here in Davos. I was going to speak last night. It was a well-established event at the USA House, a simple conversation, discussion. After Trump's speech, they made sure that I didn't. They made sure it was canceled. And that's what's happening in the United States of America. Freedom of expression, freedom of assembly, freedom of speech. It's America in reverse. They're censoring historical facts. They're rewriting history. They're censoring books, 4,340 books, libraries, and in schools, banned in the United States of America. You're watching institutions. Any institution of independent thinking is under assault and attack by the Trump administration. You're seeing what's playing out in the streets of American cities, what played out in California, the second largest city in the United States of America. 4,000 National Guard were federalized. 700 active duty Marines were not sent overseas. They were sent to my largest city in the state of California. Masked men, guy Greg Bovino, dressed up. It's as if he literally went on eBay and purchased SS garb. Greg Bovino. Secret police, private army, masked men, people disappearing quite literally, no due process, windows being smashed, seatbelts on, being, you know, literally just sort of cut off, people dragged in the streets, kids separated from families, knocking on doors, racially profiling American citizens. So is it surprising the Trump administration didn't like my commentary and wanted to make sure that I was not allowed to speak? No. It's consistent with this administration and their authoritarian tendencies. But forgive me. These are objective facts.
So Gavin Newsom doesn't like censorship suddenly. And I highly doubt that the WEF, and I'll let you kind of take us there, Jenica, but I doubt the WEF wanted to censor Newsom. And that's the reason why they canned whatever he was alluding to in that some speech that he was going to give. Jenica, you've done some incredible research into the censorship complex, the individuals who are behind the scenes trying to censor Americans. What do you make of Newsom's claims?
Well, Newsom's a little crazy. It's obvious. You just showed video from the speech at his WEF. So it's not censored, okay? Like, what's censored? You just showed a speech. So, but here's the thing. One thing that's important to remember, the surprising thing about the WEF is that there's very low policy there. Instead, it's people who are working on different levels to work above the levels of their country and their government and their elections. They want to ignore... They want to ignore actual people and individuals. They see the entire world as one thing. And that's the reason why Trump was threatening and warning countries and saying, hey, we have culture. People are there. People are not just data and numbers. People have their own motivations. They want security and they want to be people, not just data points.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the key point in all of this. Larry, I know this was a topic that you were also hot on when I sent over this clip. What do you make of Newsom's comments there?
Well, you know, I had to suppress profanity while that was playing because Newsom's a liar. The irony is of course he's guilty of everything that he was just saying there. What did he say? Totalitarian tendencies of the Trump administration. Who was it who told people they couldn't be on the beach during the COVID pandemic? Who was it who was shutting down churches? Who was it who wouldn't let kids go out and skateboard? Who was the person who was responsible, you know, for all of those kinds of things? Who is it also, engaging in ballot harvesting and, you know, on and on. I mean, Gavin Newsom is a liar, but he's a habitual liar and he's very comfortable lying. That you sense that the man has no conscience whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah. You do sense that. And he is a liar. And, you know, I had to go back to try to find that bill that he pushed through in California. I'm sure you guys remember, but there was that bill where he wanted to censor medical professionals who maybe had a different interpretation on what was happening in regards to the COVID vaccines that were being pushed out there. So I think that was really interesting that he seems to have forgotten that. And due to his due to the legal challenges, they actually had to repeal that law because they were going to lose it. And that was a big one. I also want to turn to clip 21 next, because there seems to be this effort, and I'll let Jenica take this one next, because there seems to be this effort where those who were responsible for some of the most unethical pushes to mass vaccinate individuals, they're trying to rewrite history. And Justin Trudeau, who was obviously leading in Canada at the time, he's now claiming that he actually never forced these vaccines onto anyone. Let's take a listen.
Through the greatest public health crisis that we've faced in 100 years in this country, since the Spanish flu, my responsibility was to keep as many Canadians alive as possible. And all of the scientists and the medical experts and the researchers, not just in Canada, but around the world, understood that vaccination was going to be the way through this. And therefore, while not forcing anyone to get vaccinated, I chose to make sure that all the incentives and all the protections were there to encourage Canadians to get vaccinated. And that's exactly what they did. We got vaccinated to a higher level than just about any other of our peer countries. And that's why we had a less deadly pandemic than most other countries.
All right. So, Jenica, I mean, he's obviously trying to rewrite history. Natural immunity did a lot for places like Canada, and they don't want to give that credit. But there was this big push behind the scenes, and you've kind of detailed a lot of the propaganda that was spewed to mass vaccinate all across the country. Are you concerned, though, by these world leaders who are going to Davos now to try to rewrite history to make it look like they are on the right side of things?
That's a difficult question to answer, but it's a good question. I think it's important to try to get inside their mind. These are the people who have all the money and all the power and everything. If you think about it, we spend our own personal lives and we're only trying to impress each other. You know, our wife, our boss, whatever. We're just trying to make a good impression. But if you're already at the top, who are you trying to impress? You're trying to impress other people who are already at the top. And they're all trying to impress each other. But they really have no connection to the people at the bottom. They're so completely out of touch. So, of course, they'll rewrite the story to make themselves look good because they can and they want to. But of course, I I don't think they're consciously lying, though, to be honest with you. They're just humans trying to impress each other. And the way that they're doing it, they end up making real stupid decisions, even though they actually believe they're trying to do something right.
Yeah, yeah. That's more of an optimistic take. I'll say that. So that's a good one, Jenica. Thank you on that. I want to actually talk too, before we run out of time, about President Trump's push to pressure Europe to allow him some control over Greenland. Let's listen in on clip 20.
So we want a piece of ice for world protection, and they won't give it. We've never asked for anything else, and we could have kept that piece of land, and we didn't. So they have a choice. You can say yes, and we will be very appreciative, or you can say no, and we will remember.
We will remember. Larry, I mean, I'm laughing over here because it's a real threat. I don't think he's trying to be dramatic. What do you think the reaction, though, of those European leaders was when they heard President Trump make those comments on the stage yesterday?
Well, they've been lying for some time about what Trump's intentions are. And, you know, this show of sending soldiers to Greenland and, you know, we're going to send battleships and, you know, members of the military and all this, all trying to make Trump look like he's, you know, on some sort of global conquest tour. And obviously that was never in view here. Trump is a businessman. That people need to bear that in mind. And what Trump was saying here is, look, we have been sending trillions of dollars to NATO and getting nothing in return. Indeed, we're not even sure you guys share our values anymore. But this much we want. We want Greenland. And you can give it to us and we'll be grateful. Or the next time you're in trouble, say, with Russia, and you're expecting us to fund a war against Russia or to assist you, we're going to remember that you didn't give us what we wanted. And, you know, all of this, Brianna, is very important because the singular thread that ran through Trump's entire speech, it wasn't NATO, it wasn't Greenland, it wasn't economics, it wasn't windmills. What Trump's singular theme was, improving the lives of Americans. And Greenland is important to America because of protection. You know, ICBMs, you know, coming from Russia or China into the United States, that's why Greenland matters. And NATO matters because he doesn't want to burden the American taxpayer. And the environment, mental initiatives matter because he thinks they're a complete waste of time. So all of this had to do with what's best for the American people. And I loved it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was great. It was a great message to make sure he broadcasts on that stage. So I'm all on board. Larry Taunton, thank you for joining us, as well as Jenica Pounds and her interpreter. Words are so complicated on this Thursday morning for me today. But thank you all three. You guys are doing an incredible job on the ground in Davos. And we look forward to following you on your last day there. Don't party too much, though. I did see a video. And I hear you guys really like to party down there in Switzerland. So, all right, party, enjoy while you can. Thank you guys for joining me.
Thank you, Brianna.
Thank you, guys. Folks, we are keeping our eye right now, and I wanted to bring you straight there because it looked like things are getting quite heated in the Jack Smith testimony that's going on right now on the Hill. Let's take a listen.
I don't recall, but those two things had nothing to
do with it. It was 16 days after becoming the highest-ranking Republican in the House of Representatives, you subpoenaed his toll records. Do you agree that that might reasonably be considered a violation of the speech or debate clause?
I do not, and I want to be clear that the toll records...
You were collecting months' worth of phone data on the Republican Speaker of the House, the leader of the opposition, right after he got sworn in as Speaker, all around the time of a major vote. That sounds like a flagrant violation of the speech or debate clause to me, and I think most people agree with me. And Speaker McCarthy had no recourse, did he? Because you issued a non-disclosure order ensuring that neither he nor any of the American people knew about these subpoenas. Is that right?
The toll record, the non-content toll record subpoenas We did secure non-disclosure orders for those subpoenas.
You did, and let me ask you, Mr. Smith, at the time you secured those non-disclosure orders, was Speaker McCarthy a flight risk?
The non-disclosure order was based on concerns about...
Was Speaker McCarthy a flight risk?
He was not.
He was not. Then why did your non-disclosure order refer to him as a flight risk? It says right here, the court finds reasonable grounds to believe that such disclosure will result in flight from prosecution.
Sir, when securing a non-disclosure order, the risks... don't have to be associated.
You think that the Speaker of the House is a flight risk?
Can you finish answering the question?
No, this is not your time. This is my time. You think the Speaker of the House is a flight risk? You think he's going to hop on a plane and leave the country?
No. What I was trying to explain is, with respect to a non-disclosure order, the risks aren't necessarily associated with the subscriber to the phone. The risks to the investigation.
I think that you were using, this was clearly in reference to Speaker McCarthy, and you were using clearly false information to secure a non-disclosure order to hide from Speaker McCarthy and from the American people the fact that you were spying on his toll records. But I've got more, so let's move on. In May of 2023, you also issued subpoenas for toll records of 9 U.S. senators and an additional representative. Is that right?
In May of 23, we did issue...
You did, and there were non-disclosure orders in conjunction with those subpoenas as well, right?
That's correct, consistent with department policy and
right.
The law.
So again, nobody would know what you were doing. The senators would, and the representatives would, and the American people wouldn't know what you were doing. Is that right?
The toll records that we secured and the non-disclosure orders were consistent with policy and consistent...
And you knew whenever you were doing that there was a risk you were violating the speech or debate clause. Is that right?
The toll record subpoenas that we secured were with the concurrence of the public integrity.
Your own analysis says that you knew there was a risk you were violating the speech or debate clause. I have it right here. This is an email from John Keller at Public Integrity Section to your team. As you are aware, quote, as you are aware, there is some litigation risk regarding whether compelled disclosure of toll records of a member's legislative calls violates the speech or debate clause in the D.C. Circuit. That's from your own analysis right there. So you did know, didn't you?
Sir, with respect to the item you just put up on the screen, the last sentence states...
We're going to get to the last sentence.
Okay.
We're going to get to the last sentence. And you cite case law in here, quote, the bar on compelled disclosure is absolute. Is that right, or do you think that you didn't have to abide by that precedent?
To be clear, this statement is not from my office. This is the statement of the public.
This is your justification for those subpoenas and NDOs that you ordered. This was part of your analysis. It's a cursory analysis. I think it's worth noting. But let's get to that last sentence then. Quote, given my understanding of the low likelihood that any of the members listed below would be charged, the litigation risk should be minimal here. In other words, you're using a novel legal theory, which you knew was novel, has never been tested by any court. You're not charging any of these members. Nobody's going to know about it because you issued NDOs. Nobody's going to sue about it, so who cares? We're going to do it anyways. I mean, you walked all over the Constitution throughout this entire process.
Mr. Chairman, the gentleman's time is expired.
Buying on members of Congress, and you know it. It's absolutely disgraceful.
The time.
I yield back.
Gentleman yields back. Not going to be charged. They're not going to see it. They're not going to know because we're not going to tell them. So let's go ahead and do it. It's exactly what happened. The gentleman from Tennessee.
That's exactly what happened, and they did their best. And will they ever be held accountable? Probably not going to happen. I'd rather be a little realist rather than telling you all dreams. But that does it for the American Journal this morning. Working on a big show tomorrow, so make sure you're here. In the meantime, though, the Alex Jones Show starts next. Don't go anywhere. More to expose next.
So we had Stuart Rhodes, the founder of Oath Keepers, former K-6 political prisoner, constitutional lawyer, so much more on paratrooper. And he wanted to try methylene blue like so many other guests have done. I'm like, I got so busy with all the Iran war stuff and the commies rioting. So you ever get it to take it on air? All the guests, dozens of them that have taken it, within 45 minutes to an hour, have varying degrees from extreme energy and feel really great, fog lifting, to just over the top crying and feel so good. Especially the first time you take it. electrochemical in the mitochondria, cleans out the cells, just does incredible things. RFK Jr. loves it. We've got the strongest old wrestling blue. But he's going on Owen in about 30 minutes. My show just ended and I forgot to do this. He's like, hey, are we doing Methylene Blue? So he's going to take it now. But guys, don't forget when he's on Owen. So maybe he forgets before he's going to go off to tell us what he felt. And if he doesn't feel it, we'll put that out. I've had like out of 300 plus people we've given it to, two people did not feel it. That means your mitochondria is in perfect shape. So Stuart, go ahead and take a half dropper or so. That's about a half dose. And then go ahead and shut that down. And then we're going to find out what happens to you.
We'll see. Most people initially about 30 minutes starts peaking after a couple hours, but you're going to be on Owen, so please, before you go, just tell people what you think, and if you don't feel it, we're going to tell everybody.
20 minutes later.
I can feel a definite, like, an energy spike. Yeah, it feels pretty good.
What are you going to do now? Now that you have your energy spike?
I'm going to see if it has a crash.
I've never heard of a crash.
Yeah, apparently it doesn't. But yeah, it feels pretty good. Yeah, definitely, I feel sharper.
Okay.
Yeah, I was pretty tired coming in here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was.
Well, you're running around Texas right now. You're dealing with some other issues here.
I was driving all over Texas giving speeches for True Texas Project, and I was pretty efficient in sleep. Yeah, right. I feel pretty good.
So did he give you the drink or the capsules?
I took the drink, but I got a bottle of each, and I'm going to go and do a longer-term test. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
Yeah, I do feel kind of amped right now. Yeah.
That's good. Well, that's probably, I don't know, that might be because you're hanging out with me. So we gotta maybe try to get
I think it's the Methylene Blue.